Greetings and salutations. My name is Colin Moriarty, a 20-year veteran of the gaming industry and co-host of the mega-popular Sacred Symbols, a PlayStation podcast, a weekly show I do with my good friend, YouTuber and comedian Chris Raygun. Now, PlayStation has a 25-plus year heritage, but this year is going to be especially big for the brand, what with PlayStation 5 launching this fall. Our show, Sacred Symbols, delves into all you need to know about Sony's upcoming console, week in and week out. And we also give tons of love and attention to the current gen, too, including PlayStation 4, PlayStation VR, and yes, indeed, our beloved PlayStation Vita. We dive into the news, the games, the rumors and speculation, and even the drama of the PlayStation ecosystem, and we do it each and every week, without fail, just for you. If you want to get expert PlayStation commentary and analysis with a heavy dose of humor and irreverence, consider subscribing to Sacred Symbols, a PlayStation podcast, available on podcast services everywhere. We'll keep you informed, give you some stuff to think about, and make you laugh, too. That's Sacred Symbols, a PlayStation podcast, on all major podcast services.
Hey, yeah. Hey, y'all know why Raph didn't show up tonight, right?
Why?
Because he got Madden. His ass at home been playing Madden all day.
That can't be the reason why. That cannot be the reason.
Yeah. He at home playing Madden, man.
That's what he's been doing. That's what he's been doing.
This is Dead in Sports.
This is the place where sports opinions collide, Dead End Sports. I am your host, Kenneth B. Inge. Joining me on the show, we got Shelton J.
What's happening, man? How you doing?
Chilling, bro. We got BZ430.
What up, though? How y'all living? How y'all living today?
Nikki Duse in the studio.
A.K.A. It's your boy.
And look like it might be a playoff P sighting. I just saw him hit a three.
Hey, I'm looking at it too. I'm ready. You know me, I'm ready to say this game rated PG-13.
Is he joining us tonight too?
I don't know about that.
You gotta get two in a row though before we even celebrate. So
yeah. Anyway, FIPO is not here tonight. But Q, the sixth man, will be stopping by later on. In the show to talk Sixers and probably some more basketball and stuff. So
yeah, keep 100. FIFO is hiding because he said some things.
Completely. We're gonna address it. They was at him online too about it. We're gonna address it next week.
Yeah. Oh, okay. We just gonna wait. I didn't want to wait on him. I was ready.
Well, you got a week to prepare, brother.
Got you.
But all right, well, let's get into it, man.
Before we get into basketball, because I know that's what's going on, and as I'm saying this, we're watching the Dallas Clippers game right now. There was some big news in the NFL as far as with Baltimore Ravens. They released Earl Thomas after a fighting incident, which seems like it was something very petty, but if you read more articles on it as it came out this past weekend, you hear it was a lot more than just fighting. My question to y'all, did the Ravens overreact?
Who was he fighting? Like, who was it?
The incident that blew up, the straw that broke the camel's back was the fact that, in practice, cause you know, they're doing like OTAs and stuff like that now.
Right.
In practice, he missed an assignment and he got called out by one of his teammates and he just got hot after that and was just going at it. I think they fought. And then after, you know, usually after you fight somebody, it's over, it's dead, you move on. He didn't let it go. He just kept on chirping that dude to the point where they just had to kick him off as far as send him home for the day from practice. And then after that, it seemed like that was just the last straw for the organization. Because you remember like a few months ago, he had that incident with his, I believe his wife or girlfriend, where she pulled that gun on him.
Ooh, I don't even remember hearing about that.
Yeah, I think he cheated on her somehow, some way, something happened as far as like infidelity between, and she ended up pulling the gun on him. But he didn't let the Ravens know about that situation until it came out in the news. So you know how the NFL is, they hate surprises, especially when they're dealing with the law.
Yeah.
So that was kind of like, that was like the big thing that was like, some people say that Baltimore was kind of like, if he do anything else, even sneeze, he out. And this was it. So with that being said, again, do y'all think Baltimore overreacted by releasing Earl Thomas, a top five safety?
I would say, being in the position that they are in, you do have to set precedent for how things go with your team, man. But I don't see letting him go unless you got a bona fide replacement behind it. He is a top five safety. He is a team leader. Yeah, you know, stuff gonna happen, but your stars should get somewhat of a pass. It's still not the same grading curve. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can't treat LeBron like I would treat KCP. You can't do that. You know what I'm saying? And I ain't saying you let him get a pass for everything, but, or maybe he should have been fined or maybe suspended for a couple weeks. But to release him, I just don't know about that. I don't know based off how close they are to Kansas City. It's like they're right there as far as competition with Kansas City goes. So to let him go, man, that's kind of tough for me. You know what I'm saying?
It depends on, you know, I don't know if he's been disruptive since this, you know, the start of the training camp. Like, has he been late to, like, meetings? Has he been late?
Ken, you were saying on story.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So, yeah, it's been a number of things that's been going on with him in Baltimore that I wasn't aware of. Yeah, but
let's not overreact to him.
Several meetings.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I do agree with your point, though, Shelton. You make a valid point, but I just don't know if you know, if it's been other stuff that we don't, that's not
right,
that we don't know about. So yeah, you make a valid point still. Yeah.
Right. But like you said, if it's been stuff that we don't know nothing about, like I'm sure it's more to it than that.
Yeah.
But yeah, then it makes sense. But
because for you to finally be like, all right, you're not on this team no more. Like you said, a top notch player at his position, it had to have been some other stuff building up for them to be like, all right, this is the last straw, you out of here. Like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he probably was being late to meetings and missing stuff, and yeah, that's unacceptable. You got to set a precedent at that point, like you said.
So, Ken, as far as your thoughts on it, do you think moving forward, too much to say that Earl Thomas is a cancer moving forward in any locker room?
I won't go that far. I know that in Seattle, things didn't go his way. He wanted to get paid. They didn't offer to pay him because he was afraid of getting hurt. We know he eventually got hurt. And in the midst of that, because what his fears came true, he flipped their ass off. And then he was out and went to Baltimore. And prior to this, outside of the stuff that's just come up, you know, he seems to be fine, but I think that moving forward, maybe he's learned his lesson, especially if they take that 10 mil from him. That'll whoop a brother into shape.
Especially
that's like 10 million lashes getting put on your back.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was gonna say, like, to me, that for where he's at his age and for how people are not really respecting that safety position, as you can see with Jamal Adams.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could be a top three. Usually people who are top five, top three at that position, there's no question they get paid. The fact that he didn't get paid in Seattle, the fact that he had to get traded to go to Baltimore, mm-hmm. and that he was supposed to be, that was your payday area, and then you screw that up to where you're going to miss millions, whether it's 5 to 10, I think it depends on the specifics of what he did. Any other organization is not, they're going to pay you barely that veteran minimum. If that, right. Maybe a little bit more than that, but you just lost out on, just like with the AB situation, you lost out on a lot of money just because of whatever.
And I'm sure the lawyers went through that contract, and I'm sure the reason for dismissal, they were very specific in that.
Yes.
To be able to void the contract. So I hope you got good lawyers in order to get that money. Because, you know what? I mean, I'll be honest. I don't like the fact that they can do that. And I think that, you know, sometimes it's, hey, you are a cancer. And other times it's, we're looking for a reason to void your contract.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, unfortunately for Earl Thomas, not for me, he gave them a reason to do that.
Well, to me, it was when I read the CBS article, the locker room didn't want him back.
Yeah, that's what
it
was saying.
That's what it was for me. Like, it's one thing for the organization to have their little We expect that from them
mm-hmm.
to do their little nicks and tucks. But when the locker room ain't rocking with you, you can't do nothing with that. Especially with Lamar as a young QB, especially with Super Bowl aspirations. Look, I'm not going to say they're going to be fine without him. But again, Lamar was an MVP without being able to quote unquote throw.
Mm-hmm.
So we know how quarterbacks are in this league. They can carry a lot of shit. And Baltimore already had a decent defense.
Well, last I heard, Dallas don't want him.
Yeah.
Now that could be all smoke, but a couple of insiders that have, knowledge of the situation are validating that. So it remains to be seen, man. We know how Dallas moves. They can say one thing and do another. So it remains to be seen.
So yeah, my last question to y'all is, what team will benefit the most from signing Earl Thomas after all this?
Carolina.
Yeah, we can hear you.
We can hear you, Q.
What's up, y'all? I had to make sure I got a lamp right here for B because last time I was on the, gangland.
He's still in that. He's still in that dark.
Man, I got to get out gangland. I don't know what that is, but.
It's dark in there.
Yeah, 2,300 hours. Old dog was on. Nah, I'm not trying to do that. But which team would benefit from signing Earl Thomas the most?
Yeah.
That's the question. I would say the Chiefs.
Really?
Yeah. I think the Chiefs would benefit the most of contenders. I think that you can never add enough talent. I think that to shore up that back end with him and Honey Badger, that's an issue. And the thing is, though, is that if they're going to go that route, you wouldn't have to pay him much because this is a good point that Shannon was making earlier where they're going to – they basically have them on like a prove-it contract. So you can do a whole laden incentive contract, 1-year deal, go for a Super Bowl, and be like, hey, this is your last chance in the league, dude, so what do you want to do? And I think that he would look at Mahomes, he would stay in line because of that pedigree. I don't think he would want to cause problems there because if you can't play under Andy Reid, you can't play under most coaches in NFL.
Mm. I'm surprised you said that just for the fact that they already won a Super Bowl with the average defense.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a question. You put Deshaun Watson in Kyle Shanahan's offense. Do you think the Chiefs won that Super Bowl?
Yeah. Handily at that.
I think that you can make the case. A lot of people was opposing this question to me, and I'm not either away on it right now, but I think that if you put a better caliber of QB than Jimmy Garoppolo, there's a lot of scenarios in which I think the Chiefs lose that Super Bowl because we act like Garoppolo didn't have, what's his name, wide open on what, third and long for the last chance. And
yeah, Emmanuel Sanders.
Couldn't couldn't make the pass. And that's because Garoppolo all season long was glorified system QB, in my personal opinion. Y'all going to see that in the next 2 years. He needs Kyle Shanahan to win. He needs Kyle Shanahan to put up those numbers, and it is more so the scheme that's getting those guys open. You put a raw talent like a Deshaun, you put a raw talent like a Carson Wentz in that offense, that the Chiefs, I think you could make the case they lose a Super Bowl by at least 2 touchdowns. So you need to actually shore up that back end and make sure that when Tyrann Mathieu and that front end and those front seven get tired, that you have something shirt up on the back end. It's not just about Tyrann. You got to have another leader in there. I think that Earl, everywhere he goes, as much as people want to talk about locker room, every locker room he's in has like that, you can't mess with us attitude. I think that the Chiefs need more of that along with the guys like Clark, along with the guys, guy that they just extended, but their DN, who's all world. So they need to just keep adding more, in my opinion, because you already got Mahomes signed up for the next, 10 years? So what are we talking about? Keep just plugging in these little guys right here. These guys will fall out of the sky, and you just got to – it's your responsibility as the Chiefs to know when to plunge on these type of situations. Randy Moss type of situations that Belichick's may win Super Bowls off of, or not that situation, but go to Super Bowls off of. That's what extends your run, is that understanding of, okay, it's the guy to plunge on.
I would think it's between the Falcons and the Packers that I would say he would be a good addition, especially that prove it year type of deal. Just because the Falcons have been going through the defensive injuries for the last three seasons. So he would definitely, especially secondary, he would definitely help them out. And with the Packers, I know they need offensive weapons, but within that conference of the NFC, you got a lot of weapons. You got a lot of high-powered offenses. You need that secondary help. So those are the two teams that I see. I wouldn't put them on a Super Bowl budding team just yet, even though I said the Packers. I mean, as far as like the Chiefs or the 49ers, just because they already made it there, so they really don't need them. And for all the problems that I'm seeing that he's having in other organizations, I wouldn't want him to corrupt that locker room or be more of a distraction than what we already got going on. Like, Chiefs already got a target on their back. They don't need extra shit. The 49ers, to your credit, Q, they got a QB who they may not even want. They was talking about trading that nigga last year for Tom Brady. So, and that was a legit deal on the table. So, yeah, those are the two teams that I see, but I can't see him going to a Super Bowl contending team right now.
What about Dallas, where he wanted to be anyway?
Dallas is trying to figure out Dak. I think any team with a young QB does not want a guy like Earl Thomas, no matter how good he is. Just because.
Do you think they need him? I mean, do you think, you know, he can.
He'll help him out for sure. He's a top five safety. He'll help out 31 teams. Obviously, the Ravens don't want him, but he'll help out the rest of the league. But Dallas to me is like, they have so much shit they got to evaluate. They don't have time to add a veteran who may be there, who may not be there next year anyway, to try to evaluate his presence and what culture he brings in. They still trying to figure out if they want to pay Dak, even though they've already said they don't. They still trying to figure out what CeeDee Lamb could be as a rookie. Mm-hmm. They still want to figure out if this defense is good as far as the people they paid. And they still want to see if Zeke can bounce back. I think, and then they also, on top of that, want to know if they need to draft another QB down the line, if they don't want to pay Dak. So it's just, to me, there's so many other questions that you have with Dallas that you don't need to add Earl Thomas, even though he could probably help you win a, possibly help you win a Super Bowl now. He could also hurt you as well. They went 8-8 with the roster they already had. Adding Earl Thomas, to me, does that make you automatically into the playoffs, into the Super Bowl?
Well, I think you got to have a QB with clout to really, like, bring on Earl Thomas. You got to have a coach who's recently won, and I think that that's why the Chiefs, and that's why I'm saying that, is because it depends on who you think is a contender. It depends on who you actually see as a contender this season. I don't think the Packers are really a contender. We do this every year. I don't see it with the offense. I don't see it with the defense. I don't see it. I think that Aaron Rodgers is regressing, and I think that it's okay to say that. He's still a great quarterback, still top two, still top three, whatever you want to call it, still top four, whatever. And that's why adding Earl Thomas in, to me, doesn't make you any closer. It just, like, gives you another wild card, right? But when you have a QB who they've locked up for 10 years, that's culture setting, right? You have Andy Reid, that's culture setting. You already seen what they did with, what's his name, the running back that they cut. We don't even know his name anymore. Played for the Browns.
Kareem Hunt.
Kareem Hunt, they cut him. You know what I mean? Tyreek is on a short leash. That's why he's acting really good now. And I think that you see that Andy Reid sets examples, and that if Andy Reid is able to sit down with Earl Thomas and he sees that, all right, this is a guy, because remember, this is the guy who gave Mike Vick a chance. So this is why I'm telling, like, this is not just, you know, me just pulling something out of my ass. This is just, like, from
historical
trend. Yeah, historical trend. It just seems like guys like Andy Reid, guys like Belichick, guys like Pete Carroll, even. I could see a reunion there. And as much as he's flipping the bird, whatever, you pay a person some amount of M's, they'll put that middle finger down. So it is what it is, you know?
I feel you. All right. My bad. Go ahead.
Just one more question. What about Pittsburgh? I thought about Pittsburgh pairing him with Fitzpatrick back there.
Ooh.
I think that would be strong because you got a strong culture there.
Pittsburgh need to worry about a QB, not a safety.
If Ben come back strong, though, they might be one to watch out there.
Ben can come back. He ain't going to be strong. That nigga old. They need to work. They need to find out a new – as you can see, they defense is fine. Their defense got them, what, 8-8 still? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They need offense. That's what – especially in the AFC North. Yeah. But, all right.
It'd be interesting.
Let's not bury the lead since we got two Philly fans in the building. We might as well get to it. Q, that's why I'm glad you're here. I want to hear your thoughts.
Yeah.
I mean, on what? Like, let's talk about, there's a whole bunch of topics to speak on.
Well, I want to start off with this. The Celtics swept the Sixers for the first time ever in a playoff series. Sorry to put that out there, but that was just a stat that I had. They've already made the Brett Brown change. They fired Brett Brown. We've been asking that for the last 2 years. At least I have.
Been saying that's supposed to happen.
Yeah.
But what other changes do they need to make this offseason to correct, basically to correct the process?
Yeah, because
I want Sheldon to go first.
Q and Sheldon, you know, Elton Brand already said he's not doing nothing with Simmons and Embiid. So which
I want Sheldon to go first
we need to bring back Sam, man. Get the shit back right.
Oh, God.
hey, you know what's funny, though? And I thought about this later on. I think that they went away from the process. If you think about what Philly was, they were building all this young talent. And that was supposed to be the plan. We're going to build for the future. I think all of a sudden, if you notice, they kind of panicked and started trading away those building blocks. Mm. And when that happened is when the downturn happened. So it's kind of like you got rid of everything that you stood on and that got you where you were mm-hmm. and lost that culture. I was telling my brother, I was talking to him about it. Losing J.J. Redick to me hurt worse than anything else to that team. Because J.J. and Joel Embiid were magic together. And it was a good combination, a good inside-outside fit. And it kind of let Ben do his thing a little bit. But J.J. was the glue for that team. You know, trading for Jimmy probably shouldn't have done that because I like Robert Covington and what was the other guy's name?
Sarge.
Yeah, Sarge was one of my favorite players. I thought he was a wild card. But, man, I don't know, man. I think the next move that they should make really should be getting rid of Elton Brand. Like I say all the time, Brand should go. Mm-hmm. He just made a lot of bad. That Al Horford signing alone was horrible. And then, two, you signed Tobias. $180 million. What are you thinking? Like, I just didn't see it. These guys are, you know, journeymen at best. You know, all-stars as far as Harford goes, but he's really not that. So, and he's on a downturn in his career. To give him $100 million just didn't make sense. Right. So, he should be held accountable and get up out of there. I don't know who's next, but he should go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much all I got on them, you know. See what happens next year.
Man, there's so much to really unpack, but it's like
Go ahead. The floor is yours.
So on, and just from a structural analysis of the Sixers, the issue is deeper than Brett. It's deeper than Elton. The issue is the management. The issue is the ownership. And what we don't understand is that Josh Harris and all the people who runs the Sixers, they're not people who care about winning as much as they care about money. They're the kind of owners who, everyone knows this in Philadelphia. Everyone knows this if you know anything about 97.5 ESPN. This is just the way that the Sixers have always been. That's why they've never prioritized really winning anything, because we've been able to live off of Iverson. We've been able to live off of the ticket sales and the fact that Philly is a top five market just because of the state it's in. Because of the city itself. So Josh Harris and that entire group looks at basketball as just a trinket. It's an accessory to them making more money. Not to say that the Clippers owner and every other owner in the NBA doesn't look at it like, oh, this is my trinket toy, this is my money, this is my little project, pet project. But they also have a competitiveness to it that, man, we need to make this team good. Fuck, man, forget this. We need to make this team great. Josh Harris and them are just like, oh, well, we'll cut 270 staff writers during the pandemic because we need to save money. And then wonder why you get bad press in Philadelphia media by writers and people who are like, you're a bad owner to work for. So that's at the top of what we're talking about. The next level is the front office of people that is handpicked by this person, Josh Harris, and in that group. In that group are people who are still left over from the mess that was the coup against Sam Hinkie. The NBA waged a coup against Sam Hinkie. They disposed of him from Sixers management. They installed Jerry Colangelo, the head of USA Basketball. And what Jerry Colangelo did, in the same nepotistic way that capitalist America works, He put his son in charge of the Sixers. He ran it to hell. He traded every asset. He drafted every pick that was not supposed to be drafted. He went against all the conventional wisdom. And we left with a summer in which Brett Brown and Sixers management drafted and did the entire roster. Now, that was the draft in which we traded. I'm pretty sure that Michael Porter was right there. We traded Mikal Bridges for Zaire Smith.
Yes.
Zaire Smith has not played a minute.
Not one minute.
He had a peanut allergy, a sesame seed allergy that kept him out for a year. This is the moves of Brett Brown. He traded that pick so he could get a Miami pick that was used to then trade for Tobias Harris, who the Clippers were going to let go anyway in the offseason. He paid him $180 million. This is what we now have with Elton Brand, who took over after the mess of Brian Colangelo, the man who had a burner account, who was talking mess about players on the team. So it has been dysfunctional for years. But prior to that, Sam Hinkie was building, like Sheldon talked about. He was building. He was like, all right, you know, it was the management that overruled Sam Hinkie, who wanted to draft Porzingis. We're talking about Porzingis and Embiid. We're talking about Tatum, Porzingis, Embiid, Simmons.
That's a five. That's a five right there.
A core that Sam Hinkie would have probably taken had it not been for him being overruled by Josh Harrison management, who said, no, you're going to take the winner who won at Duke because the media likes Jahlil Okafor. That is impugning upon your general manager's job to do it. You are impugning upon their ability to do their job. So now we have, at present day, almost $300 million locked up in 34-year-old Al Horford and J. Cole's cousin with performance anxiety. This shit is wrong, bruh. Like, this dude, he took 27 threes, I'm pretty sure, through the first four games against Boston, Tobias Harris. He didn't make one until the fourth game.
Wow.
We are talking about Al Horford didn't make a three all series.
Wow.
And we are talking about a coach who should have been fired four seasons ago.
Yeah.
Because he was actually trying to win those games. Sam Hinkie was putting the product on the field, on the court, because Brett Brown has to coach it. But a coach has no say over the actual fundamental philosophy of the team, of what the organization is doing, in terms of, like, how are we going to construct this? What pieces are you going to have? The coach is only supposed to go out there and make what the chef puts on the table. And what that means is Brett Brown was actually trying to win. There were times in which we had clutch moments that a coach is supposed to close out a 6-point lead. A coach is supposed to close out a 2-point lead with 30 seconds left. A good coach closes that out, even if you're tanking. Ask Boston, who was doing the same thing with Brad Stevens to accumulate picks at the same time. They were doing the exact same strategy because they were able to get that haul from Brooklyn that allowed them to also be competitive and try to win. And with the bare pieces that Danny Ainge gave to him, Brad Stevens was still winning games against contenders. That shows a coach knows how to win. Brett Brown was losing every single game where we were down two, up two, down three, up eight with a minute left, losing them all. And I said, this guy can't coach a game in the offense to save his life. Everyone in Philadelphia media was, well, we got to give him a chance, man. We got to give him a chance. The process has to play out. No, we don't. Ask Jim Caldwell.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Ask Mark Jackson. We don't got to do – ask Alvin Gentry. We don't got to do any of that. It is only in Philadelphia media was, oh, he's a nice guy. But we know why that is, and we ain't got to tell nobody. You know. But the problem here in Philadelphia remains that we have management and we have a front office that does not know what they are doing. We still have Brian Colangelo people in the office. So in summation, what do? In my opinion, we either have two options. We either, in my opinion, we trade Embiid or we try to get a coach to make this work and then just put shooters around him like we were doing in 2017, like we were doing when we made the playoffs and we beat Miami. And then we went to, even with Jimmy, a guy who was holding guys accountable. We need a coach who's going to hold us accountable. We need a coach who's like, all right, Ben, if you're not going to shoot the ball, I'm putting you on the bench. And if we got to trade you, we'll get a haul for you. But I'm not going to allow you to not shoot the ball in my offense. We need a guy who's going to hold Joel accountable. Joel, you should not be gassed after running 5 minutes on the court. You look like shit. What are you doing in the offseason? What are you eating? What is your diet right now? How serious are you taking this game? You can dominate guys like Anthony Davis. You can dominate. I've seen you do it. You dominated the Gobert's. They can't mess with you when you really on and really cracking. Now imagine you with 15 pounds off. Imagine you were really like taking your fitness serious. Imagine if you actually train with Hakeem in the offseason. Imagine if you do these things. We need guys like that in the front office. We need shooters. We need guys like Joe Harris. We like, in my opinion, if we had to trade Embiid, I'm looking at Chicago. I'm looking at Orlando. I'm looking at Sacramento. I want guys like De'Aaron Fox, Buddy Hield to put around guys like Ben Simmons. I want guys like Zach LaVine. I want guys like Markkanen. I want guys like Kobe White to put around Simmons. I want guys like Aaron Gordon, Fournier, Terrence Ross, put that around Simmons. Watch what they do with that. That's what we have to begin to look at. If Phoenix is willing to offer up Devin Booker, I'm willing to trade Matisse Thybulle, Embiid, and picks, whatever you want, to put that around Ben Simmons. Because that's what we need is a dynamic guard who can – Ben Simmons can just go be an attack dog on defense. He can be that guy who's going to run pick and roll, going to run horns in that in the half court. And we don't have a coach who has ever thought of that. And we just need a front office who looks at it as an A-B thing. We have two big guys. They can go to the rim. They play defense. Let's get shooters. This is not hard. They've been making it so hard trying to find the third star. Just put the shooters around them or trade one of them. And that, in summation, is what the Sixers are in right now, a summer of decision. So this is the summer of decision. They're saying a lot of things, but we're going to see. They have to decide. What is the direction? Are we picking one, or are we going to try to get a coach to make this shit work?
Get a coach, Q
for GM.
I was about to say, hey, he just did a dissertation on how to fix Philly.
I think about this shit so deeply because it's like there's no reason why we shouldn't be here.
But why Embiid not Simmons? Why are you focused on the backcourt and not the front court?
Because to me, that's where the game is going. The game has been there for a few years. Steph Curry broke the game open. Now, Simmons is not Steph Curry, don't get me wrong. I'm saying that a guy like Simmons is, to me, a top three defender in the NBA. I think the numbers will back that up. I think that if you look at the fact that he takes the best player night in and night out, you look at how he was guarding Kawhi in that series versus Jimmy, who was getting cooked and who wasn't, who was making those buckets harder, who wasn't, and who gets the reputation for being a dog on defense and who doesn't. It's just a matter of narratives. But the numbers don't lie. The tape don't lie. Ben Simmons is a top three defender, and I would actually argue he is the best right now this season, not over the last four seasons, this season he was the best defender. The reason why you want to build around Ben is he's younger. His skills translate to the modern-day game of push pace. Ben is an athlete. He's one of the top 10 fastest athletes in the NBA. He runs the most mileage of, like, the top 20 players. I think he's, like, top six. It's him, Russ, and like guys like Braun, and they run and they run and they run. And B cannot run and run and run. His offense is predicated upon dump it down to him, making bang bodies, bruising his body all over. Ben Simmons is, all right, now imagine replacing B, put X shooter, put Devin Booker. All right, let's run. Now see what happens.
Right.
He's fluid
as well.
Exactly. He's fluid, and he's going to get better. He's a fluid passer. And I think that defense, along with a shooter next to him, a guy dynamic who could play off ball, I think you could put a guy like De'Aaron Fox and Buddy Hield, that works. A guy like Zach LaVine would benefit from not being the guy, where, all right, Zach doesn't have to play defense on Giannis tonight. Ben will take Giannis. Horford will take Lopez. Zach, you just take Chris Middleton, and we just need you to score 30. It's simple. It's not that hard that we are in this position. It's just that we have been completely mismanaged by an ownership that is so apathetic to actually winning. They just want to just get their money and just, you know, like, but you see the Warriors, they get their money and they win. The Clippers owner, he's spending all that money to win. He's putting the right people. He hired the best, Jerry West, Doc Rivers. He went and got it. So if you really care about winning, you need to go call Jay Wright at Villanova. You need to call Popovich and you say, what is your price? And can I double that for you? That's what needs to happen. But they'll probably end up with Ty Lue.
Greg Popp to be the head coach and J-Rod be the assistant? Or
no, I'm saying either or for head coach. Because to me, Jay Wright, he turned down $7 million at UCLA. But Chip Kelly also said he wasn't coming to the Eagles too at first until they made that offer again. So if it's $7 million, then all right, hey, man, you need 10? What you need? Because that's the reason why Brett Brown was one of the lowest paid coaches in the NBA for a reason. They were able to use him as that rag doll of, man, we ain't got to pay him much. He's a nice guy. Yada, yada.
Right. So.
Damn. Well, shit. I don't want this all to be about the Sixers and shit. The Celtics did win the series. They got played their ass off. Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, they looked really good. B, can you see the Celtics getting to the Eastern Conference Finals?
Yeah, I mean, I think the top four teams is capable of. I wouldn't be surprised, but yeah, I can definitely see Celtics possibly pulling off. I ain't gonna really say an upset because they really at this at the same level as the Raptors. They're gonna have to beat defending champs to get to the Eastern Conference Finals. Is it possible? Yes. I don't know if they're gonna win that series. I still think Toronto might win it, but Boston, man. Yeah, Tatum is playing. He's playing out of his mind right now, man. Like I got to give it to them. They playing. Boston playing some good ball right now. So I mean, if they beat him, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be like, no, oh my God, that's a shock. Oh Jesus Christ, Boston did the unthinkable. But no, I think Boston is definitely capable of getting to the Eastern Conference Finals and representing the East in the NBA Finals. You know what I'm saying? They definitely good enough. They definitely proved that they're good enough that they can represent the East. In the NBA Finals, you know, it's just a matter if they're going to do it or not. But I mean, I like what I'm seeing from Tatum and Jaylen Brown. I mean, that's really them. That's some easy pieces you can build around them two guys, man, because they both two-way forward, you know, guard four guys. You know, they play two separate positions. You can fill in the gaps for those positions really easy if you're building around that. So, yeah, Boston in a good spot.
Hey, man, what y'all forgetting too is Kemba Walker had 32 points in that last game. Kemba was the missing piece. Kemba over. What's his name? Kyrie.
Don't say what's his name. Don't be disrespectful.
He's what's his name when it comes to Kemba. Kemba is a much better fit for that team.
Yeah,
that was a brilliant move. I thought about that when he went from Charlotte. That's the guy who can get you buckets whenever you need him.
Yep.
But he doesn't need the spotlight, and he's not a head case. So that's the best thing that could ever happen to those young guys. They can kind of be horses.
Kemba know that Jason Tatum is that guy, so he's not trying to take that spotlight from Jason Tatum. Like
right,
like but yo.
But just like in Charlotte, if they need a bucket, yeah. Kemba can get that bucket.
Yeah, Kemba can get that bucket. Yeah, he's bucket.
That mid-range pull, yeah. Nah,
it's deadly for him, man. That it's damn easy, quick man. Step, that first quick step and that pull.
Yeah.
That's so tough to defend, man. That is so tough.
And see, I know for him he's in heaven because in Charlotte, everybody was keying on him. You knew he was going to get the ball. You knew he was going to take the shots. And he still got him off and he still did his thing. He just didn't have help. Here, you know what I'm saying, he got horses with him. He got these stallions out there on the wings. So it's much easier for him there. And, like, he can score. I mean, he going to get you 20.
Yeah.
He averaged 20 a night anyway. But like I said, on any given night, 32 is normal for him.
This Boston and Toronto series is going to be really an interesting series because you got two great coaches, you know, two really good coaches. So, you know, of course, playoff ball is coming down to matchups and coaching. So, you know, with Nick Nurse and Brad Stevens, it's going to be interesting to see what chess moves they're going to make throughout this series. And I wouldn't be surprised if it goes seven. I wouldn't.
The only thing that hurts this series is we don't know the health of Kyrie.
Yeah.
If he comes back and is able to play, can pull a Luka, then they'll be okay. And it will probably go seven. I believe you on that, too. I agree with that.
Yeah.
But if he can't play
I honestly want to see. I want to see what this Raptors team look like with Fred VanVleet leading the charge. Because I think he's made.
He's a dog, man.
Yeah, most improved player of the year type of season, and it started with the finals last year when, like, after his kid was born, he just went off.
Yeah,
and he hasn't looked back since. So I want to see, can Fred VanVleet lead a team as a point guard?
It's crazy because he was undrafted too, Nick.
Exactly. So he's
from Wichita State, right?
Yep.
Right.
Yep. That's crazy.
Yep. Yeah. Great. He was good there too. But the thing about it, him leading that team, though, Nick, him and Kyle play good together now.
They do.
So it's like, which is surprising how small they are, but, you know, Kyle Lowry played, you know, with smaller guards in college too, so he's used to kind of bodying up a little bit bigger players. But those two, man, they're just two dogs, and I want to see them both play together against that long and rangy Boston team and see what them against, you know, Kimba would look like. Now, I think Boston drugged them the last time they played in the bubble, right?
Did they play in the bubble?
Yeah, they did. I think that Boston drugged them. If I'm not mistaken, Boston pretty much I think they won by like 20, if I'm not mistaken. But this is a playoff, so this is a totally new season. We just have to see what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But I still think Boston is going to pull it out.
Yeah, somebody said, Peter Griffin in the chat said Lowry said he is playing game one.
He's on that series.
That's if they play. You know, they're thinking about boycotting.
Yeah. And we actually got a super chat about the Lions, and we can talk about that too. Appreciate that, Manuel Santos. That was a different brother. Oh no, but I got it. We got like 313 JMO. Yep. So we'll get to that. It's early. So my too early pick for that series. Better question. When do they start playing?
They play like Thursday, I believe.
Thursday. Okay. Yeah. I guess it ain't that early.
Yeah. Thursday.
I got Boston, man. I got Boston.
How many games?
Six. Yeah. Six.
I agree.
Yeah. I think they got, they got Tatum, and I think Tatum is close to being a legit superstar, and it's his team now. And I think when it comes down the stretch, the ball will be in his hands, and I think he'll make the right decision. And between Kemba and Jaylen Brown, just doing the right things in at the right time off of Tatum and Kemba, I think they could close it out. So, and I think we were talking earlier that in the playoffs, you need a guy. You need a guy that you can give the ball to when the game is on the line and the going gets tough, and they can go out and get you buckets to stabilize the game. Tatum is that guy for Boston now. And I think that Boston, because of that and the coaching, I think they'll win this series. Cause I just haven't seen a guy on Toronto. They're good, I guess, but I haven't seen a guy. Who are you going to get a ball to? It's a system. So the last time I seen a system win anything really, really big was damn fucking Detroit.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know though, man. I think Boston's going to take it, but somewhere deep down inside of me, I'm looking at the Raptors like they keep doing it, though. You know what I'm saying? They keep making stuff happen. Like we said, Van Fleet, whether it's Fred coming out there doing his thing or Siakam making some stuff happen, I think everybody – the best thing for Toronto is that team, everybody knows their role and plays their part and does their job. Everybody on that team. I'm talking about from the first man to the 12th man to Patrick or whatever. Everybody
does.
Yeah,
the deepest team.
Yeah, they do exactly what they're supposed to do. Yeah. Whereas other teams, you know what I'm saying, you got people that struggle and ain't really handling their business. Those guys from Powell to everybody they put on the court handles their role at the appropriate time. And it's just something about that team.
It's going to be a good series, man. I think it's going
to
be.
It is.
Yeah.
I got Boston in seven, but obviously, when I say in seven, it could go either way. That's exactly how I got the series. But I'm going to lean towards Boston because I trust Kemba Walker, like you said, Shelton. I think the fact that they got two closers, they don't just got one with Tatum. They got two with Kemba. I can't say two on the Raptors. So if it's a close game, like you said, Fred VanVleet would be my number one option. But outside of that, is it OG? Is it Siakam? I don't know if they...
Well, it's not OG.
Oh, it's not OG?
No.
Well, I'm just saying, like, they need I'm talking about perimeter players who can get buckets.
It is not OG.
So you can't count on Ibaka and Siakam to me to get you that go ahead bucket. But you can count on Tatum and Walker. So that's why I got them in the series.
And Shelton, the Raptors, they play August 7th, Celtics and Raptors. Celtics won 122-100.
Yeah, I figured that. Yeah, I thought it was
who played in that game? Everybody played?
I think everybody played that game.
Yeah, everybody played. Yeah.
Was it one of the first games when it was getting back, or was it closer?
When did the bubble start? This was August 7th. Did the bubble? When did the bubble start?
Bubble started like July 31st.
Yeah.
So this was
it was early on.
Yeah, it was early.
And we know we can't count regular season. These are still pros, and that's just a glimpse into it. But
yeah, everybody played. Yeah. Everybody played. Q. Yeah.
Okay.
Both teams. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's get to the team that everybody was talking about this week. Sunday, definitely. The Dallas Mavericks are right now, they facing the LA Clippers. And it's looking like a blowout right now as far as Clippers, 66-42. But the last game they had, Luka made the shot of his career, I guess. Spotlight was on him. Everybody was watching the game. It was on ABC. Shit. Is Luka top 10 right now?
Yes, sir.
Is he higher than 10? Is he higher than 10?
He's higher than 10, in my opinion. And once again, I'm going to tell you why I say that. That was only one game, but we're talking about a career-defining playoff game. There's only been a few performances like that. That remind me of Willis Reed coming out of the locker room with the leg. You know what I'm saying? The Iverson step over. Some of those classic moments. To me, that was one of those games. I mean, this dude, first off, you lost your second-best player. He was out before the game started. You found out right before the game started that he wasn't going to be there. You were down 20 points. You got an ankle hanging off that most people thought it would take 3 weeks for you to even be on the court. But you're out there playing. And not only did you play, he brought them back in the game. He got these other people involved in the game. And to hit the game-winning shot like that, a fadeaway three, I mean, what more could you ask for? Triple-double? He was getting all the rebounds. He was getting, and to me, the biggest play of the game was when he drove. I forgot who he drove on, but he missed the layup, got his own rebound, and put it back up. That was just huge to me.
Kawhi should have got through that pick though.
Yeah, there's no question about that.
You can't.
He was gassed. He was gassed though.
You can't switch that off. You cannot.
No, that's his knees. That's his knees. There ain't nothing about gas. That's his knees.
Yeah.
You got to fight through that pick in a moment like that. And you know the ball was going to be in Luka's hand. You was already guarding him. You got to fight through that pick. That wasn't even that strong of a pick for him to, like, he could have switched that. And you know,
Luka was happy about that because he literally was dancing with Reggie Jackson. He was like, oh, you going to go switch? I'm about to flamboy your boy.
Right.
Bounce in the house. they both should have chased him. If you ask me, both them should have.
Where is Luka in your top? You said he higher than top 10, Shelton. Where is he at?
Right now, Luka's top five for me. I think I think that when
you've been hanging out with FIFO too much.
Nah, I'm telling you why I say that. I just feel like that team, you know, that Dallas team is a good team, but they don't have a whole lot of top tier talent on that team. And he's carrying them along and he's made them respectable in this series. Right. And it's him. It ain't like the system. It's him. He's doing it all.
It's a system like a motherfucker.
Yeah, man, that is that man. That's get out the way. I'm about to break you down. And either I'm going to pass it or I'm going to shoot it and you can't stop me.
I feel like you're looking at his highlights more than the game.
Because if you look at the game,
the nigga he be airballing like a motherfucker on them threes.
If you look at the game,
he don't play defense. If you look at the game.
The man is not perfect, but he's getting triple doubles out there.
He damn sure ain't perfect tonight because he's playing like shit.
Oh, yeah, he's terrible in this game. But he's been keeping his play. He's been keeping his team in games. You know what I'm saying? Without him, we wouldn't even be talking about it. Who's thought about Dallas? You know what I'm saying? And you look at that team, I think they had about four guys playing that were undrafted. And, you know, just castaways on that squad. Man, that dude is carrying them boys.
I won't say that because I could say the same thing about that Dallas run they had against Miami when they was in the on that playoff run. They had a nigga named the Custodian getting a shout out. During the finals, they had a lot of casting characters of niggas who's like, who the fuck is this? But who cares? He can guard LeBron for a little bit. I think Luka's top 10. I think he proved that in that game. I'm not going to say it's a classic playoff series, even though you did run down some shit that was impressive, just for the fact that he's only in his second year. And I think even though he's showcasing that he's arrived in the NBA, I don't know how far he's going to take Dallas as the best player, or at least the most consistent player. Because right now, It could still be debated that KP could be their best player.
Well, let me ask you. Are we having a whole different discussion if KP is here right now? Like, we might be looking at Luka a little bit even differently than we are right now. It's like,
if KP's healthy, I think they're up 3-1 on the Clippers.
And the Clippers need to thank their lucky stars that KP is out right now, because the way that Paul George be, man, I'm not gonna get into that. But Luka, man,
now we're gonna get into that. But say, yeah, go ahead with your point.
I think he is top 10 at this point. I think you could put him at 9. You could put him at like 9, 8.
I agree with that, Q. I agree with that. He's like, yeah, he's like 10, 9, right there, right, you know, right.
Because it's like, to me, PG is bumped down for this. Even if they win this series, I'm not
bumping
him down. Like, I'm bumping, like, everyone has him, like, you know, sit around like 9, 10. It's like, no, you like about to be 11, 12 for me, dude. Because it's like, guys like Donovan Mitchell, I'm respecting that performance. I'm respecting that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm respecting that, like, you know, pedigree of, I gave you a 57 piece and I gave you a 51 piece with a side of biscuit. What are we talking about? Like, what are we talking about, man? Right. This is like, you know, and, just
and
the
talent. And he still bought. He was still a dog last year, even though they lost the series. But he was still a dog. Like,
yeah, and that has to count for something, B.
You didn't see no letdown in Mitchell last year, even when they lost the series. You didn't see no, oh shit, damn, Mitchell looking like a bum out here. Like, we wasn't saying that, you know.
Yeah. He was going out sad, like everybody be saying,
right? You know? Right.
You know, it's just like, it's just one of those things for me where Luka, his talent level is special, and you look at the fact that he is creating a lot for those guys and the fact that they are just torching PG though, and it's like, that to me is not so much on Luka. A lot of this is on PG not really doing what he's supposed to do, but Luka's shot, Luka taking over in the clutch, you have to give him credit for those type of things. But we have to always keep things in context though. Who is doing their job? Who's not doing their job? Who is there? If Patrick Beverley is there, are we having this conversation about Luka killing Reggie Jackson? Like, that's like a real, you know, I'm not saying that's not impressive, but I've seen hot lines, but can you make it a hot song? Like, you know what I'm saying? It's one of those things.
I mean, that man averaged 29-10-9.
You like reading off stats, man. You be reading off stats too much.
Yes. I get it. And Luka's fantastic. And 29-10-9 is fire, but it's like, we kill Russell Westbrook for the same thing.
And see, I elevate Westbrook with that, with the, what I did, you know, last year.
Is Luka higher than Westbrook to you?
To me, yeah. I think so.
I would, yeah.
That's tough to say because Russell got a high motor and I like Russell. But like I said, I look what Luka does for his team.
Russell, that's, I mean, both. He also got an MVP too. You putting a second year player over an MVP.
Yes, I am. I just feel like he brings more to the table right now. Luka 6'8". Like, he's a monster.
6'8"? He that tall?
Yeah. Did you see him standing next to Montrez?
Hold on.
He was bigger than
Montrez. I thought he was the same height as LeBron.
He's a big guard. He's a big ass guard.
Big guy.
Okay, they saying 6'7". Okay, so he was close. You close,
yeah.
He was bigger than Montrez.
Yeah, 6'7", 230. He's 6'7", 230.
What's your thoughts on Luka, Kim?
He's special, man. You know, I think he has a knack for making big shots even when he's not necessarily good at shooting a shot, meaning that three. Because, yeah, he'll airball the hell out of some three. but when the game is on the line, you know, he has a tendency to hit big buckets. And I give him credit for that. You know, as I've had a chance to watch him play a lot down the stretch, you know, he can make hell of a passes. He has a knack for being able to get to the rim, but he tends to fumble the ball a lot. In that game, PG and Kawhi did kind of lock him up down the stretch, even though he had a little hot moment where he was hitting a bunch of threes here and there. But overall, I think I agree with B and Q. I think when I looked at the list, he would definitely be 9 for me. I think that what people, if we're talking about, you know, this matchup, I think people really don't understand how good of a coach Rick Carlisle is.
Yes, that is true.
And I think that and that's why they've been able to fight and really kind of compete in this. They've been sloppy tonight. You know, and I thought there were moments where they had a chance to actually, you know, compete in this game. But,
yeah.
You know, I think we're seeing we're seeing Chris Stapp's absence. And what we're finding out is that Luka just can't, he may be able to win you a game here or there, but this game is not even competitive. And he's playing like shit. So he had his moment, but it's over. it's over, man. But I like 9-10. I think that's good. I think that's a fair assessment of him. But is he one of those guys that, cause Dallas is like one of the top rated offensive teams in the league. That's not all Luka.
All time.
Yeah. That's not
they were
all
the highest Luka. Offensive rating ever in NBA history.
Yeah. So is that Luka? That's Rick Carlisle, Chris Stapps, that's Kleber. Seth Curry has really improved in the span of his game.
Tim Hardaway
Jr., we know he can put numbers on the board. So they got talent. And I think that if you look at this team in terms of matchups, yeah, I could say Luka and Chris Stapps could, you know, talent for talent, probably you can put them neck to neck with Kawhi and PG. And I would give the edge in terms of the third best player to Lou Will. But I could easily throw Tim Hardaway right there, who could probably go. He's not a bucket getter like Lou, but in terms of talent and being able to get hot, he could be right there. And I think that's a push with the rest of the roster. So I don't think they're that more talented than the Clippers. They're just as deep as the Clippers. But the Clippers right now are fully healthy, and Dallas is banged up.
Yeah,
and Luka can't make a goddamn free throw to save his life.
Yeah, that's Ooh. He got that LeBron issue.
He does. He got the LeBrons. I love him though, man. I mean, I love watching him play. But sometimes I'd be like, man, how in the hell are you hitting this shit? Like he was trying that shit tonight, man. They were sending that shit all the way back to the other end of the court because his style can be a little bit gimmicky.
I'm not watching now, but you've been watching. How's his ankle holding up, though?
It's bad. It's bad. He's grimacing. I'm actually about to, you know, turn this shit off because it's horrible.
He's about to turn this shit off.
Yeah, I figured that.
He's grimacing coming up the court, and I know that's impacting him a little bit, at least you know in the last couple of games. And I don't want anybody to really, you know, take this the wrong way. Because I'm not shitting on Luka by any stretch of the imagination.
But you're going to shit on Luka real quick?
No, I'm not, because it may come across that way. But he's another young talent that I think will definitely carry the NBA moving forward. And he's a joy to watch. And I love his competitive fire. Like, I think he has those intangibles, those things that's not on the stat sheet. Like a few minutes ago, he was all up in Marcus Morris' face. He doesn't back down from nobody. And you know, yeah. I don't know how things are in Slovenia, but it could be a little bit rough overseas, man.
Yeah, I was gonna say they ain't scared of
everybody's like, got a hood. Every place got
yeah,
a hood.
Man. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they got a different type of
survival. That's why I didn't understand why Montrez had to apologize. Like
wolves and shit.
Yeah, like come on, bro.
Yeah, that's
something that you're going to hear regardless when you're playing with some real niggas.
Right? He probably didn't even know what he said because I don't know if he knows English all the way.
Come on.
He was like, oh, I appreciate it.
Yeah, he probably was like, oh, I don't know why you're addressing me as a white guy, but I'll take it.
I'm Slovenian. What are you talking about, white?
Oh, for real.
Get down like that.
Hey, but you know what I was thinking, though, when I watched him the other day? I was thinking, like, you know, like, yeah, that leg was hurting, but just like anything else, that adrenaline was slowing, so he was able to move. And once he figured out it wasn't so bad because he was so pumped up, I think he was able to play through it. And then I thought about it, you know, going into the night, I was like, he's going to struggle tonight because I'm sure he's feeling everything he didn't feel the other day. Right after that game, he felt it all, and going forward, he's going to feel it all. So I felt like he was going to struggle, and I doubt we'll even see him the next game, to be honest.
I mean, I don't even know. But to me, that's like, to me, a pride thing for Luka. He probably just said, I'm not going to let Trez and them punk me. So I have to come out here and play tonight and really kill. Because I think if he sat out, everybody would have been like, yeah, do what you're supposed to. And they would have just swept the series. Like they're, you know, mm-hmm. gentlemen sweep. But,
And you know, I think, you know, looking at tonight's game with it being a blowout, with his ankle hurt, I think Kristaps may be done for the series, honestly. Yeah. You know, I think that if I'm Rick Carlisle, I'm just sitting the rest of the game. Because what makes this team go is when everybody else is going and playing well. And they just haven't been tonight. So I don't know if it's the pressure, because they're young. I don't know if it's the pressure of potentially going up 3-2 in a series that nobody outside of Luka thought they had a chance of winning. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the moment may have gotten too big for them. And, you know, and much like, you know, the Lakers last night, the Clippers are front running their ass off, just like, you know, but they need that type of energy to kind of get them going. They are an emotional team. So they thrive off that stuff. So, but yeah, big response. And, you know, I know we'll probably get there, but before we get into that, I want to hit some of these super chats real quick.
We'll be back after this quick break.
Nostalgia. The treasured moments of your past. At the root of what fuels nostalgia is pop culture. And we know that Black culture is pop culture. And that's why we created Blackstalgia.
And everybody want to be Black until it's time to be a...
Whoa!
You got to calm down, brother.
My bad.
Relax.
But what Kelby said is true. Just like today, pop culture is heavily influenced by Black culture.
This is where the Blackstalgia podcast steps in. We'll discuss throwback movies, prominent Black figures, and key nostalgic moments in Black culture.
The Blackstalgia podcast can be found on all your favorite podcast apps.
Now pause the podcast you're currently listening to and go subscribe,
because we got that sauce. And if you don't got that sauce, you lost, bro.
313 JMO. This is unrelated to B-ball, but BZ and panel, what do you think about the Lions not having practice today and protesting because of the recent shooting? And let's also tie in Boston and the Raptors. Yeah. Potentially sitting out.
Well, B, I'll let you talk on that.
Oh, I mean, I thought it was dope, man. I thought it was cool to see I think they were like the only NFL organization that really stepped up vocally and with actions to, you know, saying, hey, look, this is more important than football right now, even though the Lions ain't going to do shit. But
I was thinking it
at the same time.
Damn, bro. Shit.
I'm being honest. Look, Lions ain't going
to
do
the shit. Topic, B.
But, okay, topic, yes. I think that's dope as hell. And for NFL, like, you know, we always see NBA teams always thinking progressive and doing stuff like this. But for an NFL team to step up and be like, look, football activities are done for today. Mm-hmm. There's more things to focus on. I think that's huge for an NFL team to do that, because we never really see stuff like that from an NFL team. Like I said, we see it in basketball all the time. But for an NFL team to be like, in the midst of what we know how this football season is going to go, and you're like, look, we're not even going to play football. This is not even important right now. So. I thought it was a good move.
I was surprised by it, just because I was just surprised by the fact that you mentioned it's an NFL team, let alone it's the Lions out of all teams. I would think maybe not San Fran, but like, you know, one of those super polar opposite teams, like a New York team or LA team to do it, because they're more quote unquote progressive on those coasts. But with Detroit, it makes sense because of the city and because of, it just makes sense. Like you said, because of the times we're in, but for them to come out and say that, like to cancel activities and all that stuff, right, to really stand by, not to just do a message, right, but just to stand by it and like say, like, we ain't doing shit today.
I mean, yeah, coaching, that all them. Yeah, that was crazy, man. Yeah. Hey. That was big.
Hey, isn't this the same team whose owner paid the players not to protest?
Hey, come on.
Let's
not do that.
Oh,
it's just
have
a good time.
I'm about to say, hey, hold on. Hey. Like, new information, kid. They can't change their mind. He probably saw all that money they making from it. He was like, hold on, let me get a piece of this.
You can chase me on the phone.
Hey, you, but that, I mean, hey, Ken, that's what makes it a big deal, because it's like, damn, we know what, you know, she was trying to do to the players last year, and it's like, damn, for them and do this, that's a big deal.
Black fans matter, so. Oh, you know.
I think it's dope. I'm not gonna shit on it.
You already did.
I was about to say that. I was like, can't that shit sell?
You shit on that shit a long time ago.
Boy, damn, the shit is already on it.
Obviously, it seems to me that whether it was vocal, I think there's a certain way that the NFL tends to move. And a lot of the moves they make is understood that certain things are allowed. And we got to watch what Goodell has been doing. Goodell's been walking a lot of shit back. And the most recent thing was him coming out and saying we should have listened to Kaepernick a lot sooner. That is...
He should have kept that to himself, man.
Yeah. That is him and the NFL coming to an understanding, kind of what you're saying, is that there's money in this now. Like you saying, black fans matter. So they basically given teams the go-ahead. Because I think he also said they're going to support players moving. They've done a complete 180 because this is no longer deemed profit-averse to them. Like, they don't stand to lose any money because of this the way they did in the past. Because they know this, the Lions owner, who once told them, look, I'll pay money for your charities, just don't kneel, is now allowing them to walk off the field and protest this thing. If the situation was the way it was years ago, you best believe this shit wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
You got another one?
Yeah.
I got more. All right. This is back to basketball. Do you think the Indiana Pacers are going to fire Nate McMillan because three of the last four seasons, his team has been where are players plus you're going to help me out with this one, BZB20. Swear our players plus having a bad winning percentage under 500.
Oh,
okay. He's going to get one more year just because Oladipo's been hurt a lot.
Sabonis is out too.
That's an all-star. You had an all-star this year that was out.
He got to get at least one more year. But Nate McMillan alone, to me, he's always been like a transition coach. Like, he's a good coach, but he ain't never been like the coach, in my opinion. He's kind of like Alvin Gentry.
I mean, is Indiana the team? You know what I mean? That's just where you got to kind of know your market. And it's like, know what your potential is for a franchise and what you have to do to meet your quotas. Because all this shit is money. So let's think about it from the perspective of, all right, this coach is going to keep us in the playoffs. Versus a big market team like Los Angeles is going to attract coaches who, you know what I'm saying, are trying to win championships because that's your market, that's your history, is what it is. A place like Indiana needs that stability, and they're going to keep Nate McMillan as long as they are competitive and as long as they are fighting and fighting and fighting. Like the Chiefs, they could have easily fired Andy Reid after they lost to the Texans, if I'm not mistaken. It was that year when the Texans
they lost to the Titans.
The Titans, yeah. Sorry, the Titans destroyed them that year. And that could have been the year when they were like, man, all he do is take us to the playoffs. But it was that very next, like, you know what I mean? Like, you got to understand that sometimes you are right there and sometimes it could be your year as a small market team. And sometimes that consistency gives you the ability to have a possibility. And that's just what a lot of guys are. And that's just the secondary to he's going to keep butts in the seat to see this product. And until it gets to the point where the product is clearly being held back by coaching, where it's like, damn, he's blowing games. Or because I haven't seen that in terms of that. I think that Oladipo has to pass the ball because what's his name? Brogdon was open in game three. There was so many, like he was on fire and he shot them out of that game. And I think that you have Sabonis, another all-star. And then you can probably need to look to do something with Miles Turner because that's where your weakness is, in my opinion, in terms of like a presence inside somebody who is, if you're not going to have a star talent, then you got to have either a very versatile wing to put next to Oladipo and Sabonis, or you got to get a dynamic big that fits next to Sabonis, can stretch the floor and protect the rim and does it better than Miles Turner.
Ask Nate, you about Miles Turner the next time you hear. Go ahead, Sheldon.
Nate McMillan just signed a 1-year extension the other day.
Yeah, so I knew they was going to give him a 1-year leash.
Yeah.
Just for the fact.
He already had a year left, and then they gave him another year, so he got 2 more years, actually.
Yeah.
Well, to me, I just feel like Indiana should have got out the first round, in my opinion.
No.
This is about right now.
This Miami with no Sabonis?
Yeah, without Sabonis? You missing the All-Star.
Come on now.
I'm maybe not this year, but I think within the last 3 years, Indiana should have got out the first round.
They played so LeBron and won.
Oladipo. This is what we do to black coaches, and we're not going to do this to black coaches today.
Get him.
We're not going to do it to black coaches today.
Get him.
Nate McMillan, Oladipo last year had a patella injury. This year, Sabonis is out. So we got to let him see that full roster. He's not Brett Brown where he's had the talent and he just can't do it.
Yeah,
Nate McMillan's pad has done the most with the least, like every black coach in sports does. And we're going to give him that in the extra year, and we're going to see what he does. And then we can
I said give him 1 year. I'm the one who's saying give him 1 more year to get a full roster.
But you got
to get
like, we're going to give him 1 more year. But if it's not like that, I was like, damn.
I'm just saying, like, bro, you got to, at the end of the day, you got to win. Shit. I'm sorry. I know the circumstances may not be ideal all the time, but the circumstances are never going to be ideal all the time.
Right.
You gotta at least give me a first, like, they got swept by Miami, damn near, right? Or if they not, you gotta give me at least some games. Like,
I mean, it's a bubble.
You got 50, 40, 90. Like, you got, I know I may be asking for too much. I may be asking for too much. But as a coach with, like, Indiana's always been that team that's a scrappy team. You hardly want to see them in the first round. But they're also like a tune-up team.
I don't know. Is that true? Because it sounds like you do want to see them in the first round.
That's what I'm saying. Like, they're also a tune-up team where, like, if you lacking in something, they're going to motivate you to get better.
They did push LeBron to 7.
They got LeBron to the finals probably. You know, as quiet as it's kept. But to me, it's just like, there's only so many times where you can be that scrappy team and be like, all right, we just need a new coach.
I think Q makes a valid point, man. Pretty much everybody on the screen, I think we have to – you know, give him some room because, you know, I think for me, when I learned Matt Miller could really, really coach
Portland,
when he didn't have, like, when he was losing guys, when Oladipo was out and people would get hurt here and there and they were still competing.
I'm going back to Portland. He proved to me he was a good coach in Portland because he's been dealing with injuries. He may be the curse himself because he's been dealing with injuries all his damn career.
But maybe that's what the guy's saying. Maybe he wears the players down. I don't know about that. So if that's the case, you know, he got a play out of Till's book, then maybe that's something that needs to be revisited. But I'm glad he got an extension. I think it's fair given how he lost a lot of players and, you know, to injury, and they still managed to at least make the playoffs. I got one more.
You got one more, my bad.
Yep. Manuel Santos, if everyone in the bubble is tested and negative, why do they still wear masks and practice social distancing? Look, you don't know who went out to go get some wings. You just never know.
You don't know who went to get some legs and thighs.
Hey, man, you never know who went out to go get some lemon pepper wings, bro.
Right. Exactly.
So that two-piece of the biscuit could cost the whole – that could fuck up the whole bubble.
Right. So you can't take any chances.
Nah.
Mm-mm. So, but, yeah, you know, I think I've seen that and kind of questioned that too because it's kind of weird because they'll be on the court playing, breathing, and sweating on each other. They'll come off the court, talk to the coaches, and pull the mask off to talk. It is, I'm like, you just breathing Rona, like, all over them, because I know you're breathing hard when you come off the court. So what are you doing?
Well,
it's
how often they get tested, I think there's some gaps in between that. However, like, but you still want to make sure. It's kind of like those protocols, like, you just do it anyway, just to make sure, but you may not need to do it all the time.
And I think they have a certain
time to actually be alone, and they have a certain time to be with the team, and then the rest of the days they have to spend inside their room. So it's like, I guess the times in which they are allotted to have that freedom is because they went through all of that so they could breathe, so they know that, oh, we know it here is positive.
How long is it taking those tests to come back?
I don't know, but like they're getting them shits back like hotcakes.
Like, I know where I work at, we got tested for the money they got. We got our results in an hour.
They probably getting them things at 15.
You say they put some food color in and say, you good?
Yeah, you good.
No, for real. They have a bunch of resources inside that bubble that is going right to that bubble. And if I'm being real, a lot of people should be aware that not just the NBA and other sports leagues, but the country and other countries are probably going to be looking at this for, like, how to run, like, actual cities in case this type of occurrence with viruses becomes real again. Like, in terms of, like, a reoccurring thing, like, there's, a, like, as climate change and whatnot begins to through what it's doing with two hurricanes, all that, there's going to be like probably things called virus seasons. So you never know when we're going to have to do another bubble. So that infrastructure being in place and having that for sports teams is probably going to be replicated around the league. So this is all about not just trying to keep players safe, but in my opinion, they are speculating this is probably going to be another thing they have to do again.
And they're going to have like a dome over that shit too. So you ain't going to be able to get in. You're going to walk right up to it and just bump right into it and be like, hey, how did this shit get here? You know, but no, that's actually kind of real, man. Cause I mean, you know, you gotta pay attention to that sort of stuff. Disney be testing out a lot of shit.
They
low key be testing out a lot of shit. But it was something else I was going to say about the mask thing. I think obviously I think some of the people are still, you know, immunocompromised or, you know, have certain issues and they want to be protected and stuff. And, you know, so I think it's just to be on the safe side. And maybe some of them fools breath stink.
They all breath stink.
They just don't want to take any chance.
I think they all breath stink.
I think so too.
Going on to the Western Conference playoff series, I think one of y'all mentioned as far as this Denver-Utah series. Is Utah the most dangerous team in the West?
No.
No, I don't think so.
What you think, B?
The most dangerous team in the West. I don't even know. See, this bubble thing is real different, man. Like, I think just for the players, you don't have no home court advantage. I mean, it's just – I can't really say who, because at one point we were saying Portland was the most dangerous team. Before the Lakers and Portland series, everybody was saying, oh, Portland's the most dangerous team, Dame Lillard. Now all of a sudden, you know, then you had another team that was the most dangerous team. You know, it could have been Houston, the way they was playing a good small ball. Now all of a sudden Utah, you can't really tell in this bubble, man, because it's just so different now, man. It's different.
You know what? I have a theory about that, B, and that's a good-ass point. And yeah. I think it's the teams with continuity who are the most dangerous.
Yeah.
And I think that actually makes, in my personal opinion, that makes, you know, I'm not trying to divert the topic, but OKC. But to me, Utah lacks that. They lack that experience to do what they need to do. But I'm looking at those teams like the Oklahoma Cities. I'm looking at the teams like the Torontos, the guys that know their role. The guys that are going to know what the X's and O's are, where I need to be when the ball comes off the screen, where I need to be at in position to get this rebound, what's my role, how am I going to get am I going to slip this screen, am I going to go through this screen, am I taking this assignment, making this switch? These things matter. And it's like you see how teams like Philly are completely discombobulated. I think a team like Utah is still defining that foundation that teams like, I mean, it's just that Chris Paul effect, in my opinion, that can go anywhere and get a culture set up and get guys to buy in. And that's why he's my MVP, and that's the most dangerous thing.
Did anybody watch that game tonight? Did y'all see Jamal Murray?
I definitely saw. Me and Ken was watching it.
Oh, my goodness.
But
I was recording dead in gaming, but did he outplay Mitchell?
42.
In the second 42. Half, yeah.
Yeah, he
cooked
them.
They both came out. They both was hot, to be honest. They both been going at it.
Cooked him, B. Don't listen to Nick.
Chill out.
But did he outplay him in this game? This game that just happened, did he outplay
him? He outplayed him. If you watch the highlights, you're gonna come back and say this nigga outplayed him based on the highlights. But if you watch the game.
Cooked him.
The fourth quarter. Dottie Mitchell was guarding his ass, he locked him up.
Through three quarters, Utah was up by 10 most of this game, pretty much. They was in control of this game. The fourth quarter,
Jamal went off.
Jamal just went. He just went out. He willed his team to victory, and he played. It was really a Luka like performance, is what it was.
Chill out, man. Quit trying to make this nigga a verb or whatever. Like
it was very Luka.
Y'all played him pretty much. That's what you saying, Sean?
But you know what though? The difference is Joker stepped up too. Joker hit some big shots.
Joker ain't shit in the fourth.
Hey, he hits a big shot down the stretch, though.
Man, Joker ain't.
Nah, he is in the fourth. Man, he clutched.
If they had to rely on Joker to help them win this series or win this series, they will be out.
I agree with that.
They should be swept. Yeah. They should have got swept by Utah.
But I'm not gonna shit on Joker's fourth quarter performance.
No, that one free throw line jumper he hit was big down the stretch. They could put him up by three.
But to me, Jamal Murray is the reason why they're in this series. Period. Regardless of what Joker's doing. Because game one, he had to drop damn near 60 if he or close to it to beat him. And then Utah went on a 3-game win streak. Yeah, this is their second win and like, come on, like, and Denver's supposed to be the, they was in the Western Conference Finals last year.
Yeah.
I mean, they were supposed to be in the semis, but they were in the Western Conference Finals the year before that, probably, I think. Nonetheless, they're supposed to be the better team.
They're really gonna have to come out and play defense, this next game, like they did in the fourth quarter. Like I said, that fourth quarter, they played some ball. And Jamal was going around like Curly Neal with the Globetrotters. He was dribbling all over the place, shooting 360 layups.
He can't miss in the fourth. That was
an amazing shot. And that's gonna be on some highlights for some time. But yeah, he played a heck of a game down the stretch. Boy, that dude played ball.
Y'all need to show my nigga Jamal Murray some love. For real. People talking, Donovan, everybody know on the show that's been watching for a while. I'm a fan of Donovan Mitchell. Everybody here is a fan of
Donovan Mitchell. Don
gets his time. Right. It's time for Jamal Murray to get his shine. You know, I said it in the chat. I said the way the Nets can win this series, it has to go through Jamal Murray. They need to.
For
the Nuggets to win this series, it has to go through Jamal Murray. He got to match Donovan Mitchell point for point, play for play. And we've seen that. They've gone back and forth, neck and neck. And it's wonderful to watch when he turns up. And I think that Jokic is holding him back because he plays in the system. And they're able to win games like that. But this dude needs some more respect. Just because he don't ever have to get off most nights don't mean he can't get off. And I'm glad that he finally showing what he got.
And he did it tonight. Like I said, he did it. They missing Gary Harris on defense though, because I think he can. He ain't gonna, you know, he gonna shut Donovan down, but he can slow him down a little bit. But he had 42-8-8 tonight.
I mean, and on top of that, Shelton and B, because you were recording, he had like 7 or 9 points at halftime. Donovan Mitchell had 13. I think he finished with almost 30.
They snapping, man. They snapping.
Yeah, 30
series,
bro. And they both had 50 pieces. Come on, man. The guard play, just watching them battle.
I love it.
It's just fun and, then that and dunk, enjoyable.
That dunk Donnie Mitchell had.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I'm glad Denver won tonight because I get a chance to see it again.
Yeah.
Because I like both guards. I think I prefer Donovan over Jamal Murray. I just think Jamal Murray needs some more love because all they talk about is Joker.
Does he need a new team? Let me ask y'all that.
They need to get rid of Joker. I'm gonna pull a Nick. Ooh. I'm gonna pull a Nick tonight.
I ain't gonna go that far. Don't put my name on this.
You think Denver needs to be Jamal's team? I think the exact opposite. I think they need to just build around Jokic and then put a bunch of defenders and three-point shooters around him.
I say Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr.
That's too.
Michael Porter can't even stay on the floor right now. Man. He's getting cooked.
He's young, man.
I get it. But all right. Imagine this. Can we get Michael Porter and Jamal Murray on a new team where they're gonna flourish as like one and two options?
Just get rid of Joker. Get some assets.
But here's the thing though. Ownership is never gonna get rid of Joker because that's like who they're married to as the prize.
Yeah.
So it's got to be Jamal going with either Harris in the deal. People were saying the Sixers should.
I was going to suggest that. I think Murray with the Sixers would be beautiful.
Man, I'm saying like
that would be dangerous. That's exactly what Simmons needs.
I've been saying that, but you know,
okay, that's just but
what happened?
I feel that cue, but let's just say that happens.
Okay,
who would save them in this series? Because
Joker
wouldn't. No,
I'm just saying he has to because he's their franchise player.
He can't. Not in the way. Because let's be real. And B talks about him all the time. Gobert is giving Joker fits.
That business.
What they've done is they kind of pulled him out of the paint a little bit more, and he's shooting around the perimeter. But pretty much Joker has been neutralized.
I don't want to discount the fact that these are very weird circumstances and that a lot of these guys would be playing totally different ways. Like If it was a crowd, because man, I'm gonna be real. Like, we not taking into like actual account that a lot of these guys get hyped up. A lot of these dudes do have performance anxiety. A lot of these dudes who are turning up right now, all this stuff, they have full clarity of what their actual roles are because they're confined to one spot. So they're playing their best ball. Some people playing their worst ball. It's different. And that's why I'm not going to look at guys who are dropping 60. Like, Jeff Green looks like James Worthy right now. And yeah, it's like, where was this with LeBron? Where was Jordan Clarkson? Where was all this with LeBron?
I blame that on the LeBron pressure. The LeBron pressure does get to a lot of players. We've seen it with a lot of players that, and this is before the bubble, where they're with LeBron, they don't do shit.
Mm-hmm.
Once they leave, you'd be like, who the hell? Like, how many guys have you said this in the bubble? Like, who the hell is this dude?
I did ask y'all about Jordan Clarkson. I was like, if he played even halfway decent with, who knows what could happen?
Because he was ball. To me, he was a good guard with the Lakers.
But if Jordan Clarkson is part of the X factor that got Denver up, the Jazz up 3-2 now, what happens if he turns back into Jordan Clarkson?
And that's what I'm saying is like this bubble is so unpredictable.
Jazz lose the series.
So you think Denver pulls it out?
I mean, I'm sticking with my pick. I had them winning, so I'm sticking with my pick.
Y'all stop dancing over what Q was trying to say. Q was trying to say that there's an asterisk with this. Let's just call it.
Hey, you know, Shelton. Hey, Shelton, you was waiting.
The only thing we would have seen differently was maybe one of these teams that's been swept may get a game now.
There's a lot of different things.
The competition in the bubble has been NBA level.
But it is some weird shit. How is it not?
The defense is absolutely atrocious.
Yeah, this is true.
When do we care about defense in the NBA?
Whoa. Because we talk about play. Let me pull from FIFA real quick. Let me get some energy from FIFA. Whoa. Let me channel that into the channel. It's just like, when it comes to the fact that the defense in the playoffs always elevates. So we always talk about, what's playoff defense going to be like when so-and-so's in that pressure cooker? And we always talk about the environmental factors. What is going to be like when X player got the lights on them, people have expectations, the people waving in the crowd, you in a hostile environment, you're in X Arena on this night, on a Tuesday night in July, June, whatever. And you're like, man, what am I going to do tonight on this stage?
Yeah.
That's different from being secluded and having robot fans.
Yeah, and it could be one, like you said, it could honestly just be one player that affects. It still changes the whole outcome of what's happening right now.
Well, to me, the scores that you see, and like I saw the Raptors, where they score 150, the most in franchise history ever. To me, that 150 may be, 120, but they still blowing out the Nets. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. What Luka's did with Dallas the other day, that's going to happen. If Reggie Jackson is guarding Luka splash. Like, to me, it's like, what we're talking about maybe a little bit exaggerated just because of the bubble, but it's within the means of what's going to actually happen if it was in the NBA. Like, Donovan Mitchell going off for 50 isn't surprising. Jamal Murray maybe, but still, that's not that surprising. Who else was there? PG not showing up in the playoffs, that's not surprising. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like...
But TJ Warren isn't surprising? Like, you don't think guys like TJ Warren getting, like, absolute buckets in those early games is not a product of.
Yeah.
He was looking average in this postseason.
And that's what I'm saying.
You think Orlando would have beat Milwaukee at home like that?
Yes.
I don't know. You think Markelle Fultz would be shooting like this in front of a crowd? Really? Like, these are the players that it is affecting. And that adds into the score. And what I'm saying is that this gives a different outcome. As much as, like, the results of the series may probably stay the same, we might get more drama, and we might get – Jokic was playing some of the best defense of his life before the bubble. Now he's in the bubble, and it's awful. All I'm saying, bro, is that we got players whose grandmamas done died, people at home, they got to put money on. And this is just like weighing on people, bro. It is really weighing on folks.
I get you.
Yeah, they seeing their families.
You know what that's what I'm saying. You know, you're not seeing your girl. You're not seeing this. And I'm not saying that these people are off at war or nothing. But it's like, this is weird. And I think that there is a marginal way that we could look at it. Man, maybe this series goes two extra games if so-and-so has that crowd to hype him up because that's how he gets up. Now he doesn't have that. And he's a star, or he's a fringe player, or key role player, and a shooter. Now he's off, and that takes you out the entire series.
Philly never should have traded Markel Fultz.
Should never drafted Markel Fultz.
That's what I was going to say. They shouldn't have drafted him.
But they did, and they shouldn't have traded him after they drafted him. Just develop him. Anyway, they got – anyway. But, no, I think there is evidence to what you're saying, Q, and the players. The players have been talking about it. LeBron was the first to go on record. Giannis, after he got his ass whooped in game one against the Orlando Magic, you know, came down and whined about it, talking about, oh, it's all we got to do is play basketball. So yeah, I think there's some evidence. There's some weird shit, and they not fucking with this shit.
Mm-hmm. But to me, it's just like, this proves who can really hoop and who can't. You strip out all that extra glitz and glam, all the fame, all the money, the women and all that shit. Can you hoop, nigga? I'm about to drop 50 on your ass. Can you match that? And Jamal Murray and Donovan Mitchell been doing that. Like, you talking about drama. What was more dramatic than Portland going up one game on the Lakers? They was acting like, well, shit, me too.
We all knew that.
I was acting like Portland was going to go all the way, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, we all knew that Portland was mid, though.
But I'm just saying, along with the defense, it's like most of these guys, they pulling up for.
Say that again, Q.
I said we all knew Portland was going to get five games. Like, it was going to get a gentleman sweep the entire time. Anybody who was saying the Blazers was going to do something against the Lakers was caught up in, well, say it with me, the moment.
So, FIFO and Nick is who you're talking about?
Absolutely.
Hey, I said seven. I said seven. It's still
directly
a series.
At them.
It's still
yeah, exactly.
A series. We them going three straight. Dame will score
80 a game.
I think defense will change forever in the NBA after this bubble, just for the fact that we're seeing more and more stars, even sometimes players, shoot at the logo. It's hard to defend those type of plays these days, and people are normalizing that. Dame Lillard, Steph Curry.
It's one person doing that shit.
No, LeBron did it in game four.
LeBron ain't gonna be shooting that shot all the time the way.
I'm just saying, when you have to guard someone.
And he was up, what, 40?
I'm just saying, they're normalizing it, though.
Who would have thought?
I just named you three other people that could do it.
You can't give me one shot by LeBron. LeBron was front.
Luka's doing it. Luka's doing step-back threes at 30.
He did that in the regular season before the bubble.
I'm just saying, again, they're normalizing this type of offense.
You said 40. Nobody's doing logo shots except Steph Curry and Dame Lillard.
Right.
Am I right, B?
I mean, Trey Young. Trey Young.
Who else?
Right.
Maybe Trey?
Maybe.
That's pretty much it.
I'm saying when...
It's not normalized.
I'm saying when people are coming into the league shooting way better, way further out than we used to.
Because remember, I had to ask FIFA, I'm like, when did he get that shot? The logo shot. That he didn't have that shot until he got to the goddamn bubble. FIFA said he was doing it in the regular season. I don't recall seeing it. But people probably see more games tonight.
You don't watch Portland like that.
I know because your boy is a Portland fan, so maybe y'all seen it more times than I do, and I'm sure I can go to Basketball Reference. But it's just one guy in Curry.
It always starts with one. That's all I'm saying. I think we got to get used to these astronomical numbers.
BL said Dame Curry, which I named. He threw Harden in there, and we threw Trey in there already. So he said Harden. But that's it, man.
I don't think Harden shoots. Is Harden from the logo?
Yeah.
No,
from
Harden
the logo.
Harden's a volume guy. He's not a range.
That's pretty much Curry, Dame, and Trey. That's pretty much it. Let FIFO tell that Trey can shoot it from home.
And you know what? We are discounting KD, but he don't
KD
really be doing
shoot
that
it.
Shot.
Yeah. He can shoot it. He can shoot it.
So you finished your point, Shelton.
No, that's it. Go ahead.
Oh, Q, you mentioned earlier, I'm going to step back to this as far as PG. Mm-hmm. And the evaluation we had of him as a top 10.
They call
player.
It Pandemic P.
Is he a struggling? Is he just struggling right now as a superstar? Or have we overrated Paul George his whole career?
I think Pedialyte P has been in a very weird position since the leg injury. I think that we got to probably look at it in that context where he kind of rebuilt his entire game around, I'm going to be more fluid with my mechanics and I'm going to like look more, not to pass because he's still a scorer, but he was more so, how can I be fluid off the dribble with my three-point shot? How can I get my handle to a point where I'm like one of the most dangerous handles? Like you look, you talk to all the players, not that I have, but to the reporters who say they have. A lot of players, they envy guys like Kyrie and Steph, right? But really the guy they name the most apparently is Paul George in terms of the mechanics because he's so fluid and so smooth. And the reason why I think you got to take him out this top 10 is that a guy with that level of mastery over his mechanics, a guy who has rebuilt his shot to be one of the best in the NBA, a guy who is on defense when he wants to be, to me, a top five defender. When you look at that, when you look at the stature and the playoff resume, something is missing. And I think that is either we are placing Paul George in a light that he can no longer live up to because of this injury, or there is malpractice by Paul George as a player where he's failing the potential that he does have. Now, me watching the game, I can make the assessment that I think we are doing a little bit of both. I think that it's a little bit of both where Paul George is underperforming to his talent. To me, he can be a 26, 27 point game scorer in the playoffs. To me, also, he was never going to be fucking with LeBron. He was never fucking with KD. He was never doing that. He was always going to be a notch below those guys because he doesn't have the mentality and the mindset to say, you know what, man, this is my team, bro. This is my team. Mm. This is my team. Nah, we not about to lose to LeBron for the third straight. No, fuck that. In every single series, he folded to the big three. In every single series, he was the one holding Russ back. It wasn't the other way around. Russ got killed for that. And I think that we can now have to put PG out of our top tens if you really take ball seriously. And he's in that 11 to 13 range now, where it's like, until you show me that game where you had 43, 46, 51 against LeBron, until you had 51 against, you know, until you had that 50 burger, everyone has to have that 50 burger in the playoffs, man. If you're going to be that guy, everyone has to have that 45 piece, that 40 piece, that 40 point triple double. Where is that with Paul George?
So you're pretty much saying he's a Robin now, pretty much at this point.
Yeah, man, he's Robin like
he's Nightwing.
Yeah, he's definitely Robin. He's definitely I would want to say he's Pippen, but to me, I think Pippen was more mentally stronger than Paul George was. If you look at his behavior on
when Jordan stepped away when the team was his, Pippen did.
No, I'm not saying Pippen was like an example of strength. But compared to Paul George.
I'm just fucking with you. I get what you're saying though.
For me, people forget about this name a lot in Indiana. Danny Granger.
Yeah.
Danny Granger, if it wasn't for injuries, that was his team. That was his franchise when Paul George got drafted. Paul George got drafted around Danny Granger, if I'm not mistaken.
He think he came after Danny.
But Danny Granger had injury issues. Mm-hmm. And that's why the team was granted to Paul George after he bounced or he got let go. I could cue to your point. Paul George never was drafted as the guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. So maybe he never had that mentality as the guy. He just got put into the situation.
He had it. He thought he was the guy. LeBron dapped him up. But you know, he never could close. Like, they've had series leads over Indiana. And at times, looked like they were, Miami.
Yeah, Miami.
And at times, looked like they were just flat out more dominant than Miami because of their ability to rebound and because Kyle's top five center at the time, Roy Hibbert, that he had. But I'll tell you what this game has been missing, Q. Mm-hmm. A leader. And he found one in Kawhi Leonard, mm-hmm. You know, and it was at that moment I knew that PG just isn't really the guy. He left Indiana to follow Westbrook around and they were homies. Then he ditched him, you know, and went to play with Kawhi Leonard, you know, in the postseason, you know, called him leader. And then I'm going to say it again. He's riding the back of Kawhi Leonard to get to a championship. That's all it is. Mm-hmm. He played so bad against Utah. I thought he was deliberately throwing those games. And we're going to see, he was playing good tonight. He's bound to rebound and play a good game because he's just that talented and that gifted over and has that much mastery over his abilities. That, yeah, at some point he was going to come out of the funk. It's a given. But what I want to see tonight, if he's going to have that shoulder iced up tonight, is he going to have that shoulder iced up tonight?
Stay icing up that shoulder, man.
I mean, we heard that the shoulder was healthy. We heard he was fully healthy. Then the last couple of games when he's shooting bad, the shoulder iced up. Which one is it, playoff P? But I've been trying to warn y'all that playoff P, Paul George in the playoffs is a different kind of dude. And you can't get caught up in the regular season. And if this first round against the Dallas Mavericks caused him to do that, imagine when the pressure mounts and they go on and face Utah next.
Well, that's why I was asking about the struggle. And B, I wanted to see if you kind of say what I mean. Like, is this just like I talked about tune-up teams with Indiana. Could Dallas be the kickstart that PG needs to get back to himself?
I don't know,
Or this is who he is.
I think it's a little bit of that. And again, what I've been saying on this show all night tonight is this bubble is just really different. I hate that we're in this situation. I would have loved to see how Paul George would have handled playing with this team with, you know, regular home court Clippers, you know, you're traveling regular everything, but I don't know, with this bubble is really hard to assess. But he's definitely, I can't really take this series as a quote unquote tune up because of the situation that we're in, this might be the Paul George we might see this playoffs. You know what I'm saying? So.
And yeah. To add on to that, why does he need a tune up after you just got Jade on from 60 feet by Dame Lillard? Like, why do you need that from the playoffs last year?
And then plus you had 8 games to tune up before the playoffs. Come on, you had 8 games. So
I think though that, you know, the only thing about it that I see though is that this team hadn't really played together all year, so it's still not quite. He's in the best place for him because he can kind of hide. You know, that first unit you got Kawhi, and then you got Lou Williams coming off the bench, so you kind of can be not even, you know, Robin. Sometimes he can defer that to Lou Will because Lou Will had how many the other night?
Lou Will was on. Yeah, Lou Will
like 10 or 40.
So, yeah. So in saying that, that man ain't always got to get you 30 points tonight. He can kind of ease his way back into it because he was missing half the year. Kawhi missing half the year. Now they're finally, I think the pandemic helped them because it gave them a little bit more time to get to know each other, and it should be helping them going forward. I think he'll play better going forward after tonight. But what I was looking for from him, you know, in this series, even the other days was the rebounding and assists, because it's clear his shot ain't there. You know, it's clear he's not himself. But like we said, he's not completely back from any of those injuries, to be honest with you. The shoulders, I don't think he's back from from none of that.
Man, he made a whole, and this is my problem, because Sheldon, he made a whole Instagram post talking about two healthy shoulders. So, bro, to me, this is why I question Paul George's mindset. This is why I question, like, just his mentality towards the game, where it's like, you do a lot of things for show. You do a lot of things to, like, position yourself like you're that guy. But it's like, you do a lot of this, but where are the game winners at? Where are the – we were down 8, and I brought us back with 6 minutes left. Where is the Kawhi didn't have it tonight, and I poured it on the Mavericks. And it's like, yeah, you're doing good tonight, bro, but Paul George always does good in games that are out of hand in terms of the Clippers, like, you know, being up.
You're right.
You know, and it's like, where is this at when it's 98-102 and you got to bring him home because Kawhi is, you know, 6-for-19?
Do y'all think he was ever that, or do you think that people expected him to be that, so we kind of put that on him to be playoff P? Or was that who he was?
First of all, he called himself playoff P. So he put that on himself.
Mm-hmm.
But prior to the injury, yes, I thought Paul George had nets. Because the guy, even now, I mean, he could still play the game. I'm not shitting on his ability to play a game. But in the playoffs, man, ever since he gave himself that damn name, He's just been freaking ghost. And it's everybody else's fault except his. And then, you know, he's in this funk and he's on social media cussing people out.
Yeah.
And then, you know, what did he do the other day? Then he called out James Harden. Then he cheated James Harden.
I know this is a bad thing to say on a black podcast, but he needed to shut up and dribble. To be honest, because he's like, the more he talks, it's like, bruh, what the fuck is you talking about? Go and play basketball. Yeah. Like, why are you talking about James Harden when we asking about you? Why are you bringing up these other niggas' names when we talking about you?
Right.
Like, why can't you get out this funk? That's really what we asking. If you ain't got it, just tell us.
And LA media was tearing his ass up after that game, and that's what he needs to understand is, and, you know, I'm not going to attack Paul George's manhood. This is just basketball. But it's like, what we need to understand is that type of behavior lets me in on what you do on the court. Like him just a minute ago acting like he about to fight was his name because he hard fouled him. Like, that's weakness to me, dude. Like that shit is weak. Like, what's his name? Tim Hardaway Jr.?
Tim Hardaway Jr.
Like, Tim Hardaway Jr., yeah, you know that you busting their ass, so they're going to go for the cheap fouls. And even if it wasn't intentional, you gotta eat that. Like, I don't want to see you emotional. Every time we see you, you are emotional. Joe Ingles is in your ass. You're not doing nothing about it. Damian Lillard is talking shit to you all series. You're doing nothing about it. And then you think that just because you went to Batman's team that you safe in the Batcave. Nah, bro, there's gonna be a time where you're gonna have to do a mission. And it's like, we waiting for you to come out. Yeah. We're waiting for you to actually have your coming out party and be like, damn, PG, where is that game at? Luka has a game, and that's only his second year. Where is that game for PG in the playoffs where, damn, that was the defining moment of one of Paul George's milestones?
Yeah.
They asked me online. I gotta bring up Paul George. You had to criticize him. It was like, you can't criticize LeBron and not talk about P.
Oh, I've been waiting. I've been waiting, man. But I'm glad he's recovered. But I just needed to see those three games because I know I've been talking about it. And I know I'm, you know.
Do we need to talk about Portland at all? Since Q said we all knew they was going out in five.
Hey, man, they've been waiting all night long, Nick.
I've been sitting
in the chat. They've been waiting all night
long. Hold on. Y'all ain't going to do me like that. First of all, have y'all been blessed to witness and watch the Melo show one more time?
They said you were running from the topic, man.
I ain't running from shit. I'm here now, all right?
Nah, you know what?
I'm sitting down. What y'all got for me?
I came to tell Nick that he became a parody of a whole parody because if you seen that famous tweet about adding a player in, and then it's like, oh, and Carmelo turns around and hits the turnaround too, and they're down 35.
That's me.
Carmelo from the corner at the buzzer, and the Lakers win by 36.
Q. Can I not celebrate a black man? why we gotta do that, huh? All he got to tear down black men on this show. I'm just trying to say, if you want to keep it a bundle, was my pick for Portland and Seven.
Start, man?
Portland and Seven was a heartfelt pick, emotional pick. It was not logical.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest thing that I'm seeing from Portland that I'm hoping other teams notice with the Lakers when they face them in the next round is that Portland is just playing horrible defense. But as far as the competitiveness, the perimeter is still there. As far as that's still a big hole for the Lakers. And the fact that when we foul them, they shoot. Everybody on the Lakers is like LeBron. What did you say? They got the LeBronism?
Yeah.
AD at the line is inefficient.
It was one game.
Two games at least. AD.
He hasn't been great.
He hasn't been great at the line. And I don't know. And it has to be mental because like Q was pointing out, they busting Portland ass by at least 20 plus, but you still missing free throws.
It was the reason why they were losing in game. But what game was that? Three? They
play
four now.
Yeah, they play four now.
This was the tune up, Nick. You know, like this was the tune up that the Lakers had to have.
Oh, so they the tune up team now.
Yes.
They always were, man. In my opinion, they always were.
Thank you. I said that they crawled. to eighth place to get where they are. They busted their butts to get there. It was tough. I said it took a lot out of that guard. Dame, it took a lot out of him, man. It was hard to keep that pace up. They peaked too soon. And that's really what it boils down to.
But I honestly think missing Trevor Ariza is huge for this series, though, because he's the only guy I can trust on defense for the most part. Nurkic is getting exposed. For all those Portland fans that said if we had Nurkic, that would have been a difference maker, hell no, it ain't. This thing is shitty.
Man,
shitty. Because he can still get you a double-double, but it don't mean shit.
Nigga, if Trevor Ariza was playing, and DeMelo would be sitting down.
Chill out, Sheldon. Why you got to talk about – why you got to bring up shit like that?
You can't have them both on the court at the same time.
Nurkic is coming back from his injury, so I expect him probably when the season either begins next March or in December. I expect him to be where he –
Don't bail him out. I'm not, man.
It's just that, look, Portland, man, let's just – we got to be real, bro. Portland was always a team that relied on a 6'2", 6'1 guard who after a certain amount of time, his legs was going to – they were going to get shot. And you see how it took so much for them to just barely beat teams by 2 points, barely beating the Nets, barely beating, you know what I'm saying, the Suns, barely beating these teams that are just clawing for relevance and clawing to make it in. And they were the king of the trash can. So they got to the playoffs and they ran into Anthony Davis, which is a top three talent. Mm-hmm. Ran into top two player of all time, and they getting their ass beat. And it's just how it's supposed to go. CJ McCollum's back. He got a vertebrae damn near hanging out.
I know.
Like, come on now. Like, Gary Trent is talking shit to LeBron. He can't, you know what I mean? Like, this it's going bad in a lot of ways.
You talking about the weakest cousin?
Yeah.
The weakest cousin? He was dead on the weekend.
The weekday. And it's just like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you got the weekday trying to talk shit to LeBron, and Terry Stotts is pulling anything out of a hat. Let's put Whiteside, let's put Nurkic in at the same time. Whiteside's getting ate up on every pick and roll possible. KCP's found his shot. Danny Green's found a little bit of a rhythm. And you got guys like Kuzma, which is what I'm talking about. This bubble's weird. Kuzma looks like a 3-and-D specialist now. And it's like, what the hell is happening? The Lakers had to get tuned up.
That's it. I just want to say FIFA was wrong. Dame is not top two. You know, I know he put him ahead of Giannis and everybody else. You did too, didn't you, Nick?
Nah, I said he was the best point guard in the league.
Man, y'all disrespecting Steph Curry. And
that's
just,
what I said too.
All I'm going to say
is Dame better than CP?
I'm talking to V now.
You talking about historically or right now?
No, I'm talking about right now. Like, I'm talking about right now.
CP boy, wow, man.
I would give Dame over to like a healthy Dame. I'll take Dame over CP.
To me, man, Dame is like the Big Sean of NBA players.
All right, bro, come on. Like,
we gonna listen to this.
I ain't trying to hear that.
I've been waiting for this.
I ain't trying to hear that.
I love CP3. I love Dame. I fucks with Dame too, though.
The Big Sean? Are you serious?
I'm going there because y'all give them a lot. Y'all give both, like, not like you, but I mean, like, the general public. General public gives a lot to Damian Lillard for doing.
You talked about where's your 50 piece in the playoffs? Where's your 40?
Right.
Dame, like, to Shelton's point. If Dame does not score 45 plus, 40 plus, they are not here right now.
Mm-hmm. But we've seen this before.
Dame has closed out playoff series early in his career against Houston, against OKC. We just talked about it. He did this.
He wasn't the man at that time. That was LaMarcus Aldridge's team.
LaMarcus wasn't there at OKC. He wasn't there at OKC. When Dame did this, LaMarcus LA was not there.
When he did that to
Westbrook, yeah, LA was not there.
That was last year. So you telling me within a 12-month time span he's become that guy? No,
you just told me Ben Simmons this year is the best defensive player of the year.
I'm putting it in context for this year. He was, so you can say Dame has been great this year.
That's what I'm saying. He's the best point guard in the league from now on.
Okay, I thought Sheldon made it seem like you was saying he's better than Steph, like, for the last, Hugh. like,
Yeah. That's kind of how he was making it seem, though, Q.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
That's how him and FIFO made it.
What's up, King?
Nah, that's FIFO. I'm speaking for Nick. Now, Q, this Big Sean comparison, I need elaborations on that.
Man, look, man. Flashes of great talent.
Yes.
Flashes of talent. Moments where you're like, man, if he just do this. But when it's time to really get down to the album, when it's time for crunch time for real, really look at what Dame is shooting like. Really look at what the album comes out to look like. It's not quality music, and it's not really, well, it wasn't at a certain point. I would say he's gotten better. But it's like, you got to look at Dame where it's like the same way, where we have these expectations and people be putting them in these top three conversations with all these other GOATs, all these other players. Same way when people do that, they was forcing that narrative with Sean. And it's like, now, why can't Dame just be Dame and we let him play his way into that lore? Why do we always got to build the narrative before they actually bear the fruit? It's like, yeah, Dame has won some playoff series. And I said he is a guy. He is the guy for the team. But we putting him in Pantheon conversations over things I've seen Kobe Bryant do 20 times over. Over things I've seen Allen Iverson do for a whole season. And win MVP and go to the finals and get a game on Shaq and Kobe. Dame can't get a game on AD, JaVale McGee, and LeBron James at 35 years old.
You forgot about a game. He got a game. All right.
Man, come on now. In regular setting. I'm not talking about no bubble.
Y'all just disrespect.
I like Dame. And I like the Trailblazers.
You compared him to Big Sean.
I like Big Sean. He's just not that guy.
Yo, this is funny hearing Nick talk about Dame like this, because I could have swore about a year and a half ago he was not on a Dame train. So to hear Nick go to bat for Dame like this, to me personally, is hilarious.
That's why I hate B. He always bring up the bad receipts. All right? He whispers my success. I got screams my failures. All right?
He's on Nick about how he used to dog Dame out. And to see Nick go bat for Dame like this is hilarious to me.
Hey, you know my saying? If I get new information, I get a new answer. All right? I had to watch these games because I'm a Melo fan. And I'm looking at dude and I'm like, dude is really nice. Dude should get more respect. I'm saying right now, he is the best point guard in the league. When the next season happens, whenever that is, we'll see what Steph has to say to that. Cause Steph been hearing all this shit. He had Kenny Smith say, I ain't even see Steph hit that type of range before. And he responded. So I can't wait to see what Steph does. But y'all know me. I'm not the biggest Steph fan. So, and to me, Chris Paul is an all-time great, but right now he's like Aaron Rodgers. He's still really good, but he's regressing.
Hey Q, so if you had to rank, who would you rank higher? Giannis or Steph Curry? If you was like ranking players, would you rank Steph over Giannis or Giannis over Steph?
I'm taking Steph over
Giannis. Get the fuck out of here.
I'm taking Steph over Giannis.
And why? Give me a reason why.
I'll give you a reason why, because I think that Steph has another leg in his career where we could be possibly looking at the greatest point guard of all time.
What?
Yes, I'm saying that because you look at the organization, you look at what they're doing, the draft picks that they have, all right? That's number one. Number two, Steph changed the entire NBA, and he made everyone play his style. No, everyone's not playing Giannis' style because you can't play that. Everyone's trying to find that guard or that wing, and it's like you can't just find a 6'11 Greek guy, but now every kid who is 6'1, 6 feet, 5'10 thinks, damn, I can get this range and actually like play good team defense and be an MVP one day. I'm taking Steph over to him because to me, he's shown to be, he wants the pressure, whether he is delivered or not. Giannis has not shown he wants the pressure, and I don't think Giannis has delivered under any circumstance. Yes, Steph has choked here and there. But Steph has also had those game winners in the playoffs. Steph has also had where he's went inferno. And I haven't seen that from Giannis yet to where I can put him.
So Giannis isn't about to win his second MVP and match Steph in that? So Giannis hasn't been on a team that's drafted him and hasn't had as much draft success with his other draftees like Steph has, let alone all-time great offensive talent player, period. Say, I want to come play with you.
Nick, I'm just talking game for game. I ain't talking about.
I'm setting the stage right now, B. We sitting on the stage, kid. I'm just trying to talk about this slander that Giannis is keep getting from the show.
I'm just saying, who would you rank higher?
I haven't seen Giannis get locked up by Marc Gasol in the Eastern Conference Finals.
I haven't seen Steph be the only best player on this team.
What do you mean? When they built that entire team for Giannis, when they
I'm talking about by himself, because Giannis is technically by himself. Chris Middleton, he's Casper. He's just a friendly ghost. All right.
Is Clay shooting off the dribble, or is he?
No, I'm saying Clay Thompson and Draymond Green help Steph. Chris, Draymond's you can't say Chris Middleton helps Giannis at all.
You mean the All Star Chris Middleton?
Mo Williams was an all-star too.
I mean, we can match like what both have and see what both have done. I mean, we got, you know what I'm saying?
I'm just saying outside MVPs of Chris Middleton, who's the Draymond? Players. Who's the Draymond of that team outside of Chris? Like Chris Middleton, let's say he's Klay Thompson. Who's the Draymond of the Bucks?
Right, but does Draymond have that impact that he's having with the Warriors on the team when he's the guy?
I'm talking about Steph as the guy and Giannis as the guy. And
so am I. I'm saying that in the context that you are talking about, you are bringing up who they have around them because it elevates their individual greatness.
Those players without Steph.
That's what I'm saying.
Clay, you know what I'm saying?
Clay is better than Chris Middleton to me. Clay can start on any team.
Because of Steph.
Clay can start on any team.
Now, I think now working with Steph put him there, though. I would
disagree. Not because of Steph. I think Clay is his own man. He can make his own shots.
So Clay Thompson in Sacramento and Orlando is putting up like crazy numbers?
I think Clay Thompson is averaging at least 25 in Orlando.
I think he's averaging like 24, 23 points.
I watched Clay play in college. Clay was a good ball player. But Clay didn't turn into Clay until he paired with Steph.
Steph didn't turn into Steph until he got with Mark Jackson.
Steph was balling out at Davis.
Don't give me that because when he was early in Golden State, with the Bucks when they wanted Monte Ellis or Steph, what did the Warriors say? They said you can have either one. It don't matter. You got to pick one. So that shows that he wasn't that dude.
Because
they would have been like, you can't have Steph. We'll give you Monty, but you can't. Him and Monte Ellis was going.
I'm talking about his game.
His game elevated over time, just like anybody else's.
No,
Steph Curry when he came into the league.
Did you watch Steph in college?
I'm talking about the Steph Curry now.
He didn't watch Steph in college.
I'm talking about the Steph Curry now. Y'all saying he's always been Steph.
He's not saying he's always been this iteration of himself. I'm saying that Steph has always had that pedigree beside his name that carried weight. There's a reason why Giannis went in 13-14 in that draft.
Right. Right. Yeah. Giannis grew into that. The only reason that Steph had questions was injuries. That was pretty much it. That's the only thing you can say about him is those ankle injuries.
That's fine.
Once he overcame that, Steph has been Steph. We talking about a back-to-back MVP. We talking about this guy that just can shoot the lights out.
Giannis is about to do the same thing. Why are we acting like they're not?
But he's not doing the same thing, though, because he hasn't won a championship.
I'm talking about back-to-back MVPs. That's not something to sniff at. So we sniffing at that, but we yelling at Steph? Come on, man.
Nick, you lost it with Steph when you said he had no handles. What was he saying?
I didn't say he ain't had no handles. I said he can't get his own shot.
You were smoking. He said Steph can't create his own shot.
That's what it was.
Lord. Basketball.
I knew it was something.
What problem is that, dude?
Good Lord.
Thank you. Good Lord. Like, why would you say that?
My God.
Steph can't create his own shot.
That's like saying Tracy couldn't create his own shot.
I told y'all why I said it. I said it wrong at the time.
Motion overcame.
I still think Giannis, I would pick Giannis over Steph.
No, I just think.
All right, let me ask you a question, Nick.
Go ahead, Nick.
To save your life, to make a jumper, who you picking, Steph Curry or Giannis?
How far is the jump?
It's a free throw.
Because Giannis can
it's a free throw. One free throw. Your life is on the line.
Even better than that, Q. I'm gonna give him a chance. Whose hands would you want the ball in with one shot left, down one? Who do you want to have the ball, Steph or Giannis?
Right now, I'll take Steph.
In 10 years, I'm taking Steph.
No, for me. We have not seen the full formation of Giannis. Can we all say that this? Do y'all think that this is the best Giannis is going to get?
I think so too.
We already passed that 3 to 5 window now. I think
Giannis can become.
That's FIFO shit. I'm just asking y'all.
I think we are. I think this is the best we're going to see. I mean, unless he start get this KD type of jumper, I think this is what we're going to see. Turbo R2 Turbo. Giannis, he plays with the turbo on.
Because to me, y'all talked about Jason Kidd a lot, how he was acing Kidd for years, right? Mm-hmm. Until he got his jump shot dumb late in his career.
Unless Giannis get it,
and that's what I'm saying. He's still sharpening his sword.
How old is
Giannis? And let me ask y'all this question: do you think the Steph Curry we see now is the best Steph Curry we're gonna see?
Yeah, I think so.
I actually think Steph could possibly have one more MVP in the.
And that, the only reason I agree with you on that, Q, is because, like we talked about, the bubble is lacking defense. That's mm-hmm. perfect to Steph right now because he can run around and shoot all day.
That's what I'm saying.
And my last point is that even what y'all saying about Steph, y'all say y'all want him over Giannis.
Yeah.
Steph said he want Giannis. He want Giannis over him. All right? Steph want Giannis to come to Golden State to extend that run once more time. So to me... That says it all for me.
It says it all that he wants a guy to come ride with him so he can win?
Yes.
I don't know. Because he can't win on his own.
Who wouldn't?
Well, I think it's more so about which skills complement and which skills form into a winning team. And it's like, to me, I don't think it diminishes Steph's legacy. I think it only enhances Steph's legacy that great players want to play with him. Only narrative and like Jordan purists believe in that whole idea of you got to do it all on your own with nothing beside you. And it's like, that's never happened anywhere.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying from the fact of Steph, like we saw you won the title with just you and your draft class, right?
Yeah.
Or your draft mates.
Right.
Yet you still wanted to get KD after you lost to LeBron. When you was up 3-1.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, I think that only clarifies the fact that he's never going to be better than LeBron, but he is, in fact, better than Giannis because Giannis has never, even with his own, like you said, his own draft mates, he's never taken them to a finals. And if he does this year, then we have to reassess this. But I don't think they're going to get to the finals this year because I don't think Giannis's game translates to being a team like a Toronto. Where they're going to just funnel him to the middle of the lane again. Brooke Lopez is down from, shooting 37% to, like, now what? He was shooting, like, 40%. Now he's shooting 37%, yeah. So 3% is down. And you got guys like Chris Middleton and Eric Bledsoe who have been looking like, Middleton had a pretty solid game. But I don't see guys like Giannis unless they're able to, like, get that fader like Dirk or if he's able to, like, get that one dribble pound. Yeah, I'll see that. But
you know what?
He's never hitting that, you know?
Q, if they don't get to the finals this year,
mm-hmm.
we're going to have to start looking at Bud because he basically turned the Bucks into the Hawks. I mean, they're just a different version of the Hawks.
Yep.
And in all these games, looking great, doing nothing.
Yep. They don't have enough perimeter defense, in my opinion. I think they have to have – I think the numbers will – suggest otherwise, but I think that they have to find guys who can create off the dribble for Giannis, and I don't think that Eric Bledsoe is a good enough creator, and I don't think that guys like Chris Middleton want that ball for real, and I think that's why you need to spice it up with some moves and move a guy like a Chris Middleton and move a guy, even if it's a sacrifice just for more offense, I think that you could actually go either way, where you want to get either longer 3-and-D guys to go next to Giannis who can shoot, or you want to get a guy like a Zach LaVine who, all right, let's be a fun ass team. Let's like run a lot, and let's make sure that we keep the pace and keep the pressure on folks, because it's a whole different look when you got a guy like LaVine. You can throw lobs to. You can't throw a lob to Chris Middleton for real. That puts new dimensions in your offense as Giannis to be able to create guys like Aaron Gordon, who are probably going to be available in trade inquiries. You want to get guys like that tune up the entire offense and throw a wrench in there. Okay, this dude is different. This is a different look from a Middleton. It's a different look from a DiVincenzo. It's a different look from a Lopez, and it complements those guys. So, yeah.
Yeah, like Relica said, I like the way they worded it, the Hawks with the superstar, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, that's a good point. Before we get out of here though, because they've been asking us, we haven't talked about the OKC Houston series yet. So that one was looking like,
I'm surprised OKC won two games back to back.
Yeah. CP, yeah, I am too.
CP.
I picked them in six, but the way it was looking, it was like, wow, this could really be a sweep.
Yeah. Q, you said CP, man. Yeah. Is it really CP, or is this D'Antoni philosophy of shooting threes regardless of what the score is?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the reason why OKC was able to come back and win some of these games? Because from what I've seen in the last couple of games, they weren't able to close out because they got ice cold from 3-point line.
Mm-hmm.
So if that strategy was different, or if they just took twos every once in a while,
mm-hmm.
maybe they could have won those games.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that it's a mixture of both. There's a couple of factors there. It's like it is CP, where I feel like that leadership and just the ability to write the ship in those storms, where CP is a winner. He has pride, and you know that he engages each player with a methodology of, I'm going to make sure you know exactly what your role is, so you don't ever have any questions. That's one reason why they're coming back. Another reason is the D'Antoni thing. Another reason is I think Billy Donovan is coming of age before our eyes. I think that we should actually give credit where credit's due, where for years, I'm going to give him this credit, because the ability to find Dort and put him on James Harden, and what he's doing to James Harden right now, that Dort kid, is like what they're doing is they are essentially saying, we are going to make Harden work on offense and defense. That's strategy and that's tactical. It's the same way in which Ty Lue did the boxing one against Steph in the finals, and they won that finals. And all we did was give LeBron credit, but it was that actual switch that they made. And Billy Donovan identified a small ball lineup with – it was Dort, I forget the other guy, but then they run the three guards with Shea, CP, and Schroeder. And they have one of the most dangerous teams in the whole league, because they have the ability to throw in the Adams, throw in the Noels, who play pretty well together, and then throw in this small ball lineup now that he's found. So D'Antoni, yeah, you can say the shooting is a reason, but we also have to give credit to the fact that people, once again, are just figuring out James Harden is a all-time volume scorer with a bad diet, and he's going to get tired after a little certain amount of time. So you just got to wait for him to wear out, and then the tire will come off the treads.
Yep. You
know? Yeah, it was crazy because
– Harden a couple years ago, too. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Cam.
No, B, you got it. Go, bro.
I was just saying, that's funny you say that, Q, because I've always felt that way with Harden starting about 2 years ago. I was like, he plays at such a high volume all season long. He looks great through the 82 season games, and then it's like once you get to that – second round, you know, possibly, you know, Western Conference Finals, it's like Harden just runs out of gas. And we'd be like, where the fuck is he? Right. You know, it's like, it's funny that you say that. And I'm like, damn, I've been thinking that and saying that about Harden.
That whistle, B, it's like that whistle. They not giving you that. Bro.
They ain't giving you that.
Nah, it's not. Like, nobody's doing all that shit, bro. The ref going to look at you like,
right.
All right, James. And you see that now. You see that now. Guys are looking at refs like PG's crying to the refs every time. Are you like, come on, bro. That shows where your mind's at. It shows that you're not actually trying to attack the basket. You're trying to get fouled.
Yeah.
It's going to get worse every round, too.
Yeah.
Until you get to the finals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that would mean because they get the Lakers next if they win.
Yeah.
You think they're going to get a lot of calls against them?
Hell, tighten up.
Yeah. So, yeah, when I was watching that game, because Houston could have easily won that game. They were up in double digits in both games. And Harden was blowing by whoever was guarding him at the time. And he'll just get to the rim and just kick it out for a three. And they were like 3 of 20 or something. They were ice cold. They couldn't buy one. And yeah. I think they were just trying to play towards, you know, the law of averages, and it didn't happen. But I'm like, man, you got a layup right there. Like, yeah.
That shit is crazy, just, man.
Right. And in the midst of that though, they showed Billy Donovan. Mm-hmm. And I had the same thought you did, Q. Mm-hmm. And I was like, damn. I said, you know what? I'm going to have to get this brother prop.
No.
Nope. Nick, look.
Got to.
He will tell you. I think Q has heard it too.
Yep.
And FIFO know. I know. Dog.
I know.
Billy Donovan.
He was with me dogging him.
Okay, cool. So, but I got to give him.
Is it Billy Donovan or is it Chris Paul?
I'm just that kind of guy.
Is it Billy Donovan or is it Chris Paul?
It's truly both, man.
It's a little bit of both.
And it can't be both.
He got to the final. I mean, he's gotten to the playoffs for the last couple of years, and he lost KD. I got to give him his
He had Westbrook and PG.
And he lost Westbrook.
We just shit on PG for 20 minutes.
No, but that'll get you to the playoffs. I'm just talking about the playoffs. We ain't talking about getting out the first round.
We ain't talking about... Man, all right, man, let me tell y'all this. We are talking about a team that was supposed to be 11.
Right.
10, yeah.
Right. 12, right.
Lottery.
Right.
Yes. LaMelo. LaMelo yes. was on the mind.
Hey, Q. Yes. Hey, Q. And this is why I said, even though he's not in the conversation, I feel like CP3's name should at least be in the MVP conversation.
Right. To me, he's had a better year.
So then that
he should at least be in that conversation.
But that goes to my point. Q, you just said Chris Paul is an all-time great. When you get an all-time great still playing great, look at LeBron with L.A. The Lakers couldn't even sniff the playoffs. Then LeBron gets there. They're in the playoffs, and now they're talking about titles.
But we knew Frank Vogel could coach because he did it.
So let's put it in context, though. We talking about 35-year-old point guard coming off hamstring and knee injuries and surgeries.
Mm.
That was let go by that same Houston team he's playing against, right? And we're talking about a team that was scheduled to go to the lottery. We're talking about a team with a second-year player in Shai Gilgeous. We're talking about guys like Terrence Ferguson, Steven Adams, Nerlens Noel, and CP3 and Billy Donovan have been on record saying that we put our minds together and came up with a way to make this work. And that's why it has to be a duality of, it probably is a 60-40, but to me, Donovan's 40 is carrying them back from 2-0, bro. Like, they were down 0-2.
He got a bunch of castaways, bro.
I'm not saying Billy Donovan can get 10%.
Gallinari.
Gallinari is a big piece. Shai Gil was a steal.
Donovan got to make that work, though, man.
Shai Gil was a steal.
They're running three guard sets, dog. Like, that's coaching. That's not just CP. That's three guard sets. They're running three guards.
I understand what you're trying to say. Trust me. I said Billy can get 10%.
No, that's way too
much. CP is getting this 90. Because I guarantee you, if they had who's another point guard that's somewhat decent? And they had Kyle Lowry in this. They had whoever the fuck you want to mention, the middle of the pack point guard who's decent.
Even Russell Westbrook. If you just swap out Russell for CP3, you know, like
they still in the first round. They still in the first round getting bounced out, probably.
I don't know. I don't know about that.
I don't know. Because CP3, like Q said, and I said this, like before this season started. We thought CP3 was dead in the water when he went to OKC. Like, we was like, damn. Like Ken said, he was playing with a whole bunch of castaways. None of us, including myself, I was like, damn, I feel bad for CP3 because they ain't going to be in the playoffs this year. They going to be dead in the water. And look at this. They was, a 4 seed, a 5 seed in the West?
Come on, now.
Come on, man. Dude. Like, what the hell?
And before the break, they were surging towards a top 3 seed.
Top 3 seed. Yep. You're right. Before the All-Star break. Man.
And I'll give Billy Donovan that credit next year. If he do it again next year.
I think if you switch Westbrook with CP3, I don't think they would be looking like a 3 seed.
There's nothing wrong in giving the brother credit. Why we got to wait a whole other year?
Because he's had the best talent of the last 4 or 5 years than probably any coach in the NBA.
And this year, he's had less talent than he had the previous 2 years.
And less talent means less expectations. So he's comfortable.
And he's overcome those expectations.
Exactly. Steve Kerr has had the best talent in the last 3-4 years, but that's just.
I'm just talking about as far as a different rotation of players. Like, cause he had KD too. You know what I'm saying? He had KD, Westbrook. Yeah. And then he went to Westbrook to Paul George and Melo. And now he's with Chris Paul. Like he's had
but
a
But it's really just Chris Paul. Like before he had Westbrook and PG 13. Now he just has Chris Paul.
That was Chris Paul and guys.
Yeah.
It's CP3 and guys. Oh, and man. The thing is though, is that, CP can, CP can go in that locker room and say, hey, y'all, here's how we're going to be together, and I'm going to help the coach. And he can do that all he wants. But is Billy Donovan, his staff, and the collaboration with CP's genius of a mind to be able to say, how are we going to be able to make Shai Gilgeous, who isn't a three-point shooter, work with Schroeder, who is not a three-point shooter? How are we going to make this work? That is legitimate coaching. That is not just some, let me throw some talent on the floor and see what happens. Because you give Brett Brown this team, what happens? All right.
Yeah, like Christopher Simmons in the chat said, they have the same record this year as they did when they had Russ in PG-13. I mean, yeah, that's right. So I just, you don't have to do it. Obviously,
I'm gonna do it next year if I see it.
I'm doing it because I've been critical on the brother, and I don't mind giving him props where props is due. I'm okay with that because I thought
I'm saying coach of the year. I'm not saying top five.
Right. Yeah, I got you, Q. I got you.
I'll get 10%. You know what I'm saying? That's tithes, right? I'll get that to Jesus too.
I mean, real talk, we could have easily looked – people say, oh, man, you got LeBron. Of course you're going to win games. We could have said that about Billy Donovan. Man, you got PG. You got KD and Westbrook. Of course you're going to win games. He don't have it anymore, and he's still winning and getting to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So I'll give him his props. Salute to that brother, man.
Do it.
Yep. So anyway, man, damn, chat was crazy. Appreciate the super chats, man. And thanks to everybody coming through, man. We really appreciate it. We got a very lively conversation that we're going to have next week. I'm going to go ahead and prep it in advance. When FIFO returns, Luka versus Trae Young, Luka the Don, I think one of his teammates.
That's what they call him. Yeah.
Luka the Don versus Trae Young.
Ice Trae the Game.
Yeah. I can't wait for that. That's going to be
chat's been going crazy about
it. Shout out to the chat, man. Shout out to the chat, man.
Yeah, for real. Q, appreciate you coming through, man, kicking it with us.
Appreciate you.
Always,
you
know, Q, always good having you on, brother.
For FIFA. For
sure. You may have to come back for that. We may need a we may need a moderator.
I mean, for sure. I'll tap in. What's up? All right, no.
All right. That's going to do it for us this week. We'll catch you guys next time. We out. Peace.
Peace.